Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. It's Friday. Good morning, Jean. How are you today? We've made it through another crazy week.
Good morning. Oh, heck yeah. I'm doing great. Hey. Thank you.
All right. So this is our first week of 3 hours at our new scheduled time, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 Pacific, and what it's probably like 2 in the morning Hawaii time, something like that. But yeah, for the night I was there. Well, they're on a different schedule anyway, but yeah. But this is, you know, I've sort of titled this hour the week in review with Gene and me, and because there's so much that's been going on, and Friday's kind of like a catch-up day anyway. We've got an hour and a half. Derek's, you know, most people are still in the two-hour schedule. So most of our reports are still going to be in this, you know, the second and third hours, generally the second hour. And that's how we used to structure it. And so wait and see what happens. We've got Derek Park with economics, and we're going to talk debt ceiling. And I'm going to talk to him about the massive contradiction that's still going on. Even One American News, and you think they would know better, you know, at least being somewhat of a conservative source, but I guess they haven't quite caught up with the economics. We're going to be starting to send out press releases fairly soon. I think one of the ones I'm going to do is on the debt ceiling lie. You know, they keep saying, well, we have to raise the debt ceiling to, you know, so that we meet our obligations and don't default. Well, if you want to meet, well, why don't you set reasonable obligations that don't default? You know, this isn't hard to do. Anything that Congress passes, Congress can repeal. I mean, that's how laws get repealed, government departments get repealed. This is how this stuff works. And so it's not a big – well, it is a big deal because they don't want to do it. See, they just don't want to cut spending. This is the problem. It's not that they have to raise the debt ceiling to save the government. They have to raise the debt ceiling to borrow more money, you know, and then print more money and cause more inflation. And Nancy Pelosi said something staggering. I don't know if it's registered with most people. It did with me. And Gina, I'm curious your take on this. She said, it's not the dollars, it's the values. So in other words, it doesn't matter how many dollars they spend. It doesn't matter how many trillions they put us in debt. It doesn't matter how high the debt ceiling goes, which means it's not really a debt ceiling. It's actually a debt floor. It's a debt, or like it's a debt elevator. It's probably a better way. You know, it's the debt express elevator, and there's no top floor. Okay, so we're on the debt express elevator, and off we're going. But the idea that it's not the dollars. You know, and then they make this absurd comment that Biden made a comment so stupid, you know, you'd think that nobody would pick it up. And it just proves the fact that he has no business where he is. He should be on a porch, you know, drinking lemonade, watching the sunset. And I'd be happy with him doing that. I really would. You know, but where he is now, he has no business being. He said that the $5 trillion expenditure coming up won't cost anything. That's irrational. And then he said that the tax increase won't cost any money. You know, it's like, so the tax increase no one's going to have to pay anything extra for the tax increase. And the federal government's not going to have to pay for the $5 trillion expenditure beyond the federal budget it's already paid for. But the idea that this is values, you know, so what are their values? You know, insanity? Are the values irrationality? Are the values economic suicide, economic treason? What the hell are the values? Gene? There's something really wrong here.
I'm pretty disgusted as well, but I'm more frustrated with the amount of money they gave the military. And not that I don't think military should have a high budget. We got those incompetent people running it. Now, they're all still looking pretty. They're going to probably get each other a raise. No accountability to what happened in Afghanistan. They lied through their teeth. And Stewart is still in jail, as far as I know. If that isn't a travesty, there never will be. So, once again, you know, if you're a big wig politician, if you're schmoozed with a corrupt government, you can do whatever you want. If you're just like any other person, regular Joe off the street, sorry for your luck, because you're going to have to pay for things and pay more in more ways than one.
You know, it's really interesting. We've done shows on whistleblowers a lot. In fact, Jay D'Onofrio, I don't mind mentioning his name because it's on the bill. He is with the VA, and he is a whistleblower. He's one of those rare people that actually can do both. Most times, whistleblowers are the first ones to go. And there's a weird psychology, maybe you can help me out with this a little bit, that loyalty to something illegal or fraudulent or dangerous is far more important than fixing the problem. So all those folks in big pharma, you know, they're loyal to their company, and a lot of them know damn well they're producing a dangerous product. You know, in the case of the VA, they're loyal to the VA, knowing full well that, like in North Carolina, they just gave away vaccine messenger RNA spike protein infusions that were too old, that were already had already expired. You know, and so this stuff gone, but the general is the same thing. There's a lot of military people know there's a problem, but when one person steps forward to try and do the right thing, they are the ones that get persecuted, prosecuted, and thrown in jail for simply, and I know the military can't make all kinds of speeches and do things that right. Civilians can in terms of free speech. And I understand that too, because they have classified secrets. They do all kinds of stuff. And there is a mission, and the mission is dependent on, you know, cohesion and a unified military. However, having said that, when things are so egregious, you know, and if people are willing to give up their service or be discharged for it, you know, we need this information. It's more important to hear what I've forgotten his name because I'm new to this case. I must have missed it along the way with all the stuff I was looking at. What's his name again? Stewart or Stephen?
Stewart. Yeah.
Stewart. Yeah. Him. Lieutenant Colonel. He's not some lowly buck private that just decided to make a lot of noise. This guy's a lieutenant colonel. All right.
And
what
he said made a lot of sense, you know, and the bottom line is this. You have Millie going all over talking to every darn book author that's going to write a book, but yet he's not political. And where is he in the whole scheme of thing of doing his job? You know, all of them, we didn't know that they were going to fall that fast, or that turns out to be a lie. Now they're like, yeah, we figured that. What the heck were we doing there in 20 years? And how long have you guys been working through the military, being part of this military operation? If that's what happens and you're in the lead of it or a big part of it, you shouldn't have your job. You should not have your job. And I didn't hear Liz Cheney yesterday, but I have to go find it or whatever she talked, because I guess she apologized for the Republicans. And if I'd be a Republican on there, I would speak up and say, you do not speak for me. He should be in jail. He's corrupt. He did nothing but harm this country. And I'm talking about Millie.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. No, Liz Cheney is the ultimate Trump hater. You know, she's doing no good. She's doing no good for the party. If the party had any balls, they would immediately cut her campaign funds. They would take away her Republican status. They would make her an independent, and they would get rid of her. I mean, she's still free to run and do whatever she wants, but she should not be running
as a Republican. She's not doing any good for herself because she's just filled with hatred, and that's all you know she does. Anything to bash Trump. Because the hatred for Trump is so strong, and that is so sad. You can disagree with his policies, whatever, but you know what? At the end of the day, she's still bitter because Trump won.
Which is interesting, because why? I mean, why would she be so filled with so much hatred for a Republican winning? You know, granted, her father served in the Bush administration, you know, and they are globalists. You know, so if this is a globalist versus American first, you know, initiative, then I understand it. If she's doing the bidding of the globalists, you know, but she gets the media coverage because she's against Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, that's
the
problem.
Out of the back.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, just wait, she's going to get all this tenth of Republican money too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was just thinking about the generals you were mentioning earlier, General Milquetoast and McKenzie and Lloyd Austin, I believe, the Secretary of Defense, you know, the affirmative action secretary. We talked about that yesterday. You know, he's the ultimate bureaucrat. He's the affirmative. He's black. So he, you know, the politically correct crowd will advance him for that, you know, as opposed to generals that are black that earn it.
Or
Millie Milquetoast. You know, who sort of, he's another bureaucratic worm who worked his way up. You know, he made a rather startling statement. When he was asked why he didn't resign for his unbridled incompetence, you know, his incredible inability to do his job even close, he said, "I can't resign. Resignation is a protest against the president and the president's policies." So in other words, incompetence isn't a reason to resign. All right. The only reason to resign is because you disagree with the policy you get, and because you're a loyal member of the military, you're duty bound to follow lawful orders of the commander in chief. You know, so he says the only reason for resigning is because you disagree with those orders. That's insane too. We've got a government of the insane.
Right, and then that and his dad didn't resign when he was in what was it? Ujima, I forget where he was. And I'm just like, you know what? But your dad also didn't kill 13, well, it's more than 13 people. Look how many servicemen died. Look how many people have died over there waiting to come back here. And not only that, look at how many servicemen have been injured because of this incompetency. You know, so he can talk throughout both sides of his mouth, but he's still incompetent. And it's so sad that incompetency in this country, if you're a Democrat, that's all that matters. That is loyalty.
Well, it's not just Democrat. I mean, this Republicans are you know, running for cover too. They're all parroting the same line about the budget. But something interesting just happened. The House approved the defense authorization bill. Our own Matt Gaetz here in Florida, who used to be a whole lot better than he is now. I wish he'd call the show. There's so many things I want to inform him of and talk to him about in terms of ideas and strategies. Things we used to do his first year. You know, when we talked up through when I was fired from WEBY. Friday the 13th of July. It's kind of interesting, 2018. But we had a lot of good things going. We actually got a bill, you know, to him and from him to Washington on mandating the citizenship question on the census. Now, we haven't had a whole lot since because WEBY was a long established station. You know, Congressman Gaetz was on every weekend. So I walked into a really good situation that we're going to be a whole lot bigger than that ever was. You know, at some point soon, things are growing here like crazy. But the point was he talked to us. You know, and I was able every week to talk about strategy, and we were months ahead. I mean, we were literally about 6 months ahead of everybody else in the news. We were the ones that first called the Mueller Commission, you know, the insurance policy, about 6 months before anybody else had even thought of it. And so we were able to brainstorm on the air on some pretty cool things. But he voted for this defense authorization bill, which has red flag laws in it, which is the illegal confiscation of firearms for what some, you know, neighbor X or, you know, anybody thinks that you might do with guns maybe in the future. It's a prediction, and you can't convict somebody on a prediction. Now, granted, there are people that we know are dangerous from their obvious, you know, Facebook posts and actions, and like the most of the people that are school assassins are usually well known. That's different. You can do something about that because now you've got evidence, and now you can build up a case, and now you can take it to a judge and say, look, this might be a real problem. We need to do something about this person. That's different than these red flag laws where any vindictive spouse or person or neighbor or employer or employee or coworker or who knows, anybody that doesn't like you can say, I think they're dangerous. They've got guns. You better confiscate them. They might do something. You know, that's like saying, my neighbor has a car. They drink. Maybe they're going to kill somebody. You better confiscate that car. They had a glass of wine last night. You know, I mean, it's that same kind of mentality, but yet that's what we're dealing with. So anyway, so that's the red flag laws. I got off on a bit of a tangent here. But the thing was, there was nothing in that congressional authorization about reclaiming our weapons from the Taliban. Right? There was nothing in that congressional bill, not that it would have gone anywhere anyway, with Nancy Pelosi, you know, dictating what the House does, but at least the geldings could have made a noise about it. There was nothing in there. There was no official reprimand. There was no, you know, firing. There was no call upon certain generals to resign. There was actually no corrective action whatsoever for what happened in Afghanistan or the general staff or the Joint Chiefs or the military or the operation or anybody all the way down the line. There's absolutely nothing done. And that's when you do it. That's when Congress, you know, they're holding these oversight hearings. What the hell are they holding them for? Why are we holding these generals before them if they're not going to take some action when the action is so clearly warranted, needed, desperately needed, in fact? What, you ask a bunch of questions and then you let them go?
They're not going to take action because the Democrats are in charge and the Democrats think they did no wrong. Which, if you leave, 13 people got killed. And granted, I mean, things happen. People, unfortunately, military people do die, which is a horrible thing.
People die all the time. Needless.
Someone needs to be held accountable, and that's Stewart. I'm sorry, not Stewart. I mean, you can do what you want with him because he did speak out, but it's horrible what's going on, just horrible. And I think we need to start speaking up more, too, and demanding action. Get the pansy Republicans to start doing something. They may be in the minority, but you know what? They still have a say. They can still demand justice.
Oh, Democrats run Congress for the minority.
They make it lip service. That's the problem. Yeah. They just do a lot of lip service.
Yeah, the Democrats run Congress. When they're the minority, they still dictate policy because they've got the media behind them. You know, and the
I don't think they've ever had a strong Republican when the Republicans were in charge. I don't think they've ever had a strong Republican. It's like they just,
I would point to Newt Gingrich. During the 4 years he was Speaker of the House with Bill Clinton, they got welfare reform. They balanced the budget. We had a surplus. You know, when there's a strong conservative leader, even if there's a Democrat president, because it was in Bill Clinton's interest, he was going to lose big time in the midterms. If he didn't change his views, if he didn't get rid of his national health plan and all the radical things that Hillary wanted to do, he was going to lose big time. And so he made a decision because he's a political animal and he's smart enough to know he didn't be stupid in his policies that he wants to be smart enough to know politics. He's one of the best people to read the political situation, and he knew that if he didn't go along with what was happening with the contract with America, you know, and these plans to rein in spending, he was going to be out as president as far as any kind of effectiveness. So he had welfare reform. He did all the things that the Democrats would – he'd be looked upon as a radical right-winger today for what he did with Newt Gingrich. So it did happen. It can happen. It can happen again, but you can't do it with a bunch of geldings. You know, they're not capable of acting, and they should have. This is the perfect time to have done it. And, yes, it would have passed? No. It would not have passed. But the thing is, they didn't even try. And I don't fault them for not getting something passed. If you make an honest, sincere effort and you do your best to go to the American people and say, this is what we need to do. We need these generals to resign. We need to try at least do something to get our weapons back. I mean, they're just sitting around blaming, well, we left all our weapons there. Oh, woe is us. Gee, the Taliban's got all our weapons. Okay. Well, why don't we get them back? You know, well, they've stolen them. They've gotten them. Yeah, what are they going to do with all those helicopters and things? Or if we can't get them back, destroy them.
The military gave it to them. They didn't steal nothing.
Which means it's planned. That was a gift. That was the nation building. That was Obama giving the Taliban Afghanistan. So they got a Sharia law constitution, which Claire Lopez told us about. They've got all the weapons to defend their new empire. The crying shame of this is all the Americans who were injured and killed in Afghanistan fighting for a Sharia law constitution that they had no idea about. Okay.
Yeah.
So from 2004 to 2021. So what's that? 18 years. All right. So for 18 years, no, let me see, 2004, my math sucks.
About 17 years.
17 years, yeah. So for 17 years, our forces were there fighting for a Sharia law constitution. And in the end, after all that fighting, after all those people who were killed and injured, we surrendered, gave the country of Afghanistan to the Taliban, and gave them the weapons to hold it. Now, does that strike you as a logical winning strategy? And yet there's no repercussions. They're getting away with it because they have the general support.
Right, and they're talking smart about it too. I mean, do you see how smug they sit there and look? And it's just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, because they don't care.
It's insane. But I do want to say something.
Sure.
I really believe what Claire was saying yesterday. I want to tell people, keep the faith. Keep the faith. Where there's hope, there's faith. And where there's faith, there's everything. And just because it's not happened before or doesn't, nothing said in the Constitution or whatever, keep the faith, because I got to believe something better is about to happen.
Yeah, I except really that do. It,
and maybe
it
it's
is
a pipe dream, but I'd rather have faith than no faith at all.
Yeah, you're talking about the election. Yeah. And quite honestly, it is in the Constitution. Article 2, section, or Article 1, Section 2, Clause 2. I mean, I've got it right here in the letter. Let me bring out the letter that these legislators wrote. So I love Claire Lopez. Don't get me wrong. She's a genius. She knows things that are just amazing. But in this case, I really believe she's wrong. Right? And so it says here, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. So let's get that out. So this is Article 1.
And the bottom Article line 2. Is this. If they're allowed to cheat, they're going to continue to cheat more than ever because no one's going to hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy. And now with what they're trying to do with the election laws and stuff like that, elections should be a state thing. It shouldn't be a government mandated thing telling you what to do. It should be based on state legislature, just like it's always been.
Yeah. Yeah. So we read this letter yesterday. From Wendy Rogers, and it's from 41 state representatives, state legislators, so representatives and senators. And the very first sentence, we the undersigned state legislators of the United States are vested with the plenary power, I guess that means multiple powers, I'll look up plenary, U.S. Constitution Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, to oversee the election of the President of the United States. So Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature, start again, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature therefore may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. Okay, so let me say that again. Notice the word appoint. They didn't say elect. They said appoint. Okay, so the states literally do not even have to have a popular election. Now, I happen to agree with a popular election for the electors, because that's when, you know, that's when the people get to voice their consent as to who they want. Okay, and the state says, okay, yeah, that sounds good. We'll go with that. So in that respect, there is a popular vote. There is no national popular vote because we're not a nation of, you know, we're not a national government. We don't vote for the national, you know, office. The states vote for the president. And the reason is because the states ratified the Constitution. The federal government basically serves under the direction of the Constitution given by the states. So they were smart enough when they made this thing to say that each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. Now, to me, that means they can replace Biden electors with Trump electors. Okay, I know Wendy Rogers is going for decertification, which is fine, because as long as if Biden gets below 212, you know, the thief in chief for stealing the White House, I mean, 270 electors, he no longer has the electors to be president. And he's not president. I mean, he's a thief. We know that. I mean, let me rephrase that. But he no longer has, you know, any justification or any legal, that's not even true either. He can't stay in the White House.
but then I got a question. If he doesn't win, then who's technically in charge at that moment? If they take the electors away from him, and you got to believe that, you know, some of the other states, Georgia, Michigan, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, are going to step up to the plate and see the voter fraud. But I want to tell you, plenary means complete in every respect. Absolutely.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Unqualified.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Fully attended or constituted by all mm-hmm. entitled to be present.
So each state can appoint their electors, and they can have it by popular vote. They can do it by legislative vote. You know, they could say the governor can appoint the electors, which is kind of stupid. They're not going to do that. But I'm just saying it's up to the state legislatures. So I think they're fully empowered by this. If they have plenary power, as you've defined it, which is, you know, you've got the definition there. Thank you. I appreciate that. This is what we have, Gene. Gene can do all things I either don't have time, can't do, or it's just, you know, I'm so glad you're here. But this is, you know, this is critical that it's the states. So I'm surprised she said that they didn't have the power to replace them with Trump electors. They can do that. So I think they should do both. I think they should replace the Biden, you know, fraud electors with lawful Trump electors. You know, if and I wouldn't even say decertify. I would actually say disqualify. Okay, disqualify is a stronger term. If you decertify, that means.
Because of voter fraud, they can't say who those votes were cast for. They could have been cast for Trump. Who knows? I don't think so. But that's why I think they're not.
You don't think they were cast for Trump?
They're not
Trump?
Replacing Biden with Trump. That's just me.
Well, there were only two people in the presidential ballot, or maybe if they're independents, write-ins, things like that. We didn't know who they were. But there are only two major candidates. And we can talk about that another time, too. There are only two major candidates on the ballot, okay? If one of those candidates is disqualified, the other candidate wins. You know, this is why I think disqualification is stronger than decertification. Decertification means that they remove the Biden electors. So, in other words, the state of Arizona does not send any delegates, any electors.
Right.
To the Congress, okay? Or what they're really doing is they're taking their electors back, and they have the plenary power to – see, there's no time limit here. So when Claire says, you know, once it's done, that's crazy. That makes no sense, because it just says here, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives. Okay, so that's two senators and however many representatives there are. That's how they determine the electoral count. Okay, and people go, why? How come all the states have two senators? You know, some states are bigger than others. Well, because that's not how this works. We're not a democracy. And let's get the dirty little secret out there right away, okay? If we were a pure democracy, we'd be Marxists, you know, a long time ago, because people don't vote for freedom. The dirty little secret is freedom has to be imposed on you. You know, freedom has to be imposed in a republic. Otherwise, you know, if it were democracy, the difference between a democracy and a republic is a lynch mob and a trial with evidence, due process. That's the difference. You all have a democracy, you go into tyranny real fast. See, socialists love democracies. It's the fastest way to totalitarian governments. You know, so we have to, we literally have to, another, in order for all of us to be free, you know, at Action Radio, we have to, you know, make everybody else free too. That's the dirty little secret. So this is why we go over this stuff, and this is why we advocate for this stuff. But there's no time limit here. Okay. So the electors, so the question that has never been asked before is, are the electors electors for the entire term of the person in office? We didn't think about it because we've never had this situation before, but that's not in the Constitution, where this is where it would go to court. That the number, it just says, it says shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. Well, does it mean they can't appoint multiple times? No, that's not covered by this. So there's every reason to believe not only can they appoint, they can disappoint. Well, that's not the right word. Unappoint, remove. All right. So if they can appoint electors, they can also remove electors. All right. So that's done. I still think disqualification is stronger, because that would make those Biden electors Trump electors. But I'll settle for decertification. It's like a path on the way. And then it goes, see, if they decertify and Biden gets below 270 electors, then it goes to the House under the 12th Amendment. So that's where we stand. But if they disqualify, then Trump automatically gets the electors. And as soon as he gets over 270, you know, he gets his office back. Let's call it by what it is. He gets his office back. How am I doing? You with me so far? Still make sense?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. 12th Amendment. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be in the Senate. They shall name the ballots a person for blah, 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 blah. Let me get to the good part here. That's why I always have a constitution handy, because you never know when this is. Yeah, person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. Here we go. I'll start here. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be president. If such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have such majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers, not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives. Oh, here we go. So in other words, if you don't have a majority, you know, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states. Because remember, the states are more powerful than the federal government. They just have yet to reassert the power. The representation from each state having one vote. So that's where it says. So let me just read this again. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be president. If such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, that would be 270. And if no person's having such a majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president. I'm not sure what that means. The House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. So in other words, if it's less than the majority, if someone gets less than 270 votes, which is a majority of the electors, then the vote goes to the House. Okay. So there's two pathways here. One is disqualification. The electors become Trump electors. Trump goes immediately back into office. Well, that'd be interesting. If they disqualify, Biden electors become Trump electors. Trump goes back in. If they decertify, and when Biden gets below 270, you know, real votes, then it goes to the House and the House votes. Now, right now, there are more Republican state delegations than there are Democrat state delegations. So Trump would win that way, too. So either way, Trump wins. Decertify or disqualify, Trump wins and gets his office back. Huh. That's kind of a long way of saying it, but that's where we are. Gene, what do you think?
Yes.
Or shall I continue on here? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting how these things work. All right, I'm going to do a couple quick things here. I noticed that we seem to talk in half-hour segments. It just seems like a natural time to take a break. So I'm going to play you a couple of things here, and then we'll be right back. I have much more for you. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Dangerously cool. Well, yeah, I think I'm going to work more and more on having, you know, half-hour breaks like that. And we're getting real commercials. We, you know, this is becoming a bigger and bigger operation. And so more and more folks, I think, will be interested in sponsoring Action Radio. And so off we go. Off we grow. This is what I figured for this time is, you know, we kind of go over the week. We review the past shows and we talk about the things that we talk about that nobody else talks about. But I want to toss something in, a couple things in here real quickly. Live chat is live. And if anybody wants to use the live chat and text in a message to us, feel free. So far, Bumper Jack's been our most enthusiastic person, you know, at the Keyboard Warrior station, but feel free to do that. You don't have to call us. You know, you're perfectly welcome to chat that way. And Jean will let me know when something comes in. And she'll be the first person you'll talk to, just like when you call in and you hear that magic voice, you know, Action Radio, and then you're in. And so we'll see what you want to talk about there too. The other thing is, Gene, I haven't even told you this, but our band has our first gig. So, you know, my band, Starfish, you know, it's the nice thing about having my own show is I get to do a little self-promotion here. So at Gulf, Gulf Coast Garage, which is a craft brewery in beautiful downtown Milton in the historic district. We'll be playing tomorrow night. And so I've asked a couple of members of the band, actually I've asked the whole band to call in at 7 o'clock, but they're musicians, you know, they might kind of miss that deadline, you know how it goes, but they're busy guys. And, but we have our first gig. So as everybody needs an outlet, you know, and I know better than anybody because I do this pretty intensively. You got to have an outlet. There's no politics in the band. We just rock out. We have fun. I play guitar for, 40 years now, something like that. And I'm just getting the hang of it. It takes a while sometimes, but you know, I think just in the last 5 years, it started to make sense. So after 35 years of playing, I go, oh, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. So don't be impatient, folks. It may take a while for you to get the hang. When you see these, 5 year, practice people, on world tour, you say, how do they do that? Good question. Because I don't know. It took me 35 years before I got the hang of it. So, but don't give up because you never know. So, dreams sometimes take a little bit of work, but you can get there as long as you don't give up. There's always a chance. All right. Let's get on to, I want to cover this week's shows just real briefly and see if Gene has any comments. Again, if you want to call in 215-383-3832. First thing, I think we pretty much covered Monday where the title of the show is President Nobody Decertifying, the constitutional way to do that. So we've covered that. Tuesday, we had a very interesting show. Again, this is where we're breaking some new... Oh, did you have a comment on Monday, Gene? Did you want to do anything further on that?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. All right. So, and most people are wondering why I'm asking Gene questions all the time. It's because she's not here. we're about 1,000 miles apart. And so that's why this is... I like to keep, just sort of find out where we are as it all goes. But Tuesday was something very interesting. We took on Catholic Charities and the other religious groups that are on the illegal alien gravy train. So, it's one thing for the illegal government that's currently occupying the White House to open the borders to illegally bring in an illegal invasion. I mean, everything they do is illegal, and the list is endless. That's why the title of the show today is Nullify, Isolate, and Disempower the Federal Enemy Government, because they are our enemy right now. They are doing everything possible to hurt this country. They are doing more than any foreign power would do to destroy this country. They are the biggest enemy we face, and they weren't elected. They're in power illegally. They're using illegal powers. Everything they do is illegal. Everything should be suspended because they're under an investigation. That's usually what happens. You get suspended when you're under an open investigation, and that's what's happening right now with the audits. That's an open investigation. Ongoing is the term. They're involved in an ongoing investigation, so they shouldn't be allowed to do anything really. Except, sort of like maintain policy, and that would have been Trump policies. But they're not doing that. They're acting radically, and I can't imagine anybody voting for, except the radical Marxists, anything that they're doing. So they're not governing by the people. They're not governing by our consent. Most of the states are fighting them, and I think that's the way to go. We have to isolate them. We have to, I don't know how we can take our taxes back or not take their money, create laws that stop them. And one of the things I'm doing, we're doing here in Santa Rosa County in Florida, is we have a bill. And like I say, I'll probably send out a press release to a whole bunch of folks on this today that creates an illegal alien-free zone of Santa Rosa County. All right. I mean, this is a direct middle finger to the occupation government. Say, no, we're not going to take your illegal aliens. They're not going to live here. We're not going to let them buy property. We're going to take it. We're going to take their houses, cars, everything we can. We're going to take the businesses from people that employ illegal aliens. And the question I haven't answered yet is with an organization like Catholic Charities or the Lutherans or the Baptists or the Episcopalians or any of these religious groups that are facilitating the invasion of this country, can we take their property too? I don't see why not. But that's what we covered Tuesday. And so this isn't done. This is just beginning because they are the facilitators. They're like the opposite of the Underground Railroad that freed slaves. All right, everybody. The left is always comparing, illegal aliens to slaves. Well, as I said before, people weren't trying to break into slavery. It's the exact opposite. Slaves wanted freedom. These people don't want freedom. They want your stuff, and that's all the difference in the world. And then being facilitated and paid for it by our tax dollars, through a government, through what I consider an illegal program to resettle illegal aliens here and make it possible for them to live here. See, that's the biggest problem. That's why illegal aliens are able to stay, because the government makes it possible for them to stay. They get an ITIN number. They get benefits. They get all kinds of things they're not entitled to because they have no rights here. Hear that, Bumperjack? Illegal aliens have no rights here because you cannot have rights in a place that you're not allowed to be in. And if you can refute that, good luck. It's impossible. I win. What do you think of that show, Gene? Any ideas for follow-up? What do you think we should do? I just throw her on the spot. I do this to Gene all day. If you're my producer, this is what happens. I give you impossible questions and no time to think about it. You can pause. You can come back to it. You can circle back.
Yeah, I'll circle back. Okay.
You want to circle back? Okay, all right. Wednesday, we...
Actually, you know what? I can't even stand that term anymore. to me, it's just incompetency.
Yeah. Circle back means that's Jen Psaki, you know, talk for, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't want to deal with this. Shut up and go away. That's what circle back is to her. Because, you know, the funny thing is she never circles back. Never.
No.
You know, she just circles. She never circles back.
She should be out of there pretty soon, correct? Because I thought she was leaving by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, how much money do you think she's making? And how, you know, I think she's leaving because she wants to do the book tour. You know, my first year in the Biden insurrection, or something like that. Okay, let's continue on to Wednesday's show. Wednesday, Action Radio is the only media source on the planet advocating a constitutional budget. I know, I've looked. If someone can show me another one, please tell me. But not only have we advocated a constitutional budget, we've actually published one. And I did that in two sources, an article in Canada Free Press and a video, which is available from our Action Radio YouTube channel. So either way, you can find out what a constitutional budget is. It's Article 1, Section 8, from actual budget numbers, as near as I can figure it. All right. It's not exact because the numbers come from all over the place, but it's probably pretty close. In fact, I confirmed it with Dr. Walter Williams. Before he passed away, was head of the economics department at George Mason University. So it's not like I haven't run by, you know, peers. And he found it very accurate and very, very fully approved what we were doing, which is fabulous. But anyway, the idea of a budget actually constitutional proves very simply that the budget is 75% unconstitutional, 25% constitutional. And the 25% that's constitutional is mostly the defense budget, although they goofed this time, as we talked about earlier, the interstate highway system, the airways, the infrastructure, the waterways, things like that. And the last is the necessary government offices in the Constitution, the patent office, trademark office, the Supreme Court, and the inferior courts, you know, the necessary offices that are Congress, the presidency, those things that are specifically mentioned in the Constitution are the necessary offices. You know, commerce, trade, you know, regulating the Indian tribes, you know, things like that. But that's it. That's it, folks. That's it. That's all they can do. You know, no entitlement is constitutional. Social Security, Medicare, none of that is constitutional. All right. So the plan is that what we're advocating, and Jeannie, I don't think I've got your official position. I don't want to speak for you on this, but as far as I'm concerned, as far as me representing Action Radio, we are advocating a constitutional budget, a reduction of the budget to $1 trillion, and the $3 to $4 trillion extra in revenue that they take in goes to paying down the national debt, which if they keep on schedule will be paid off in 10 years. We will be a debt-free nation in 10 years if we go to a constitutional budget. Now, that'll mean an alternative retirement system and alternative socialized, you know, getting away from socialized medicine, but we'd be better off with a Chilean-style individual retirement account anyway. And this may take a phase out. I mean, it may not be able to be done. It's not going to be able to be done because those of us that are eligible for it in the very near future, like me, you know, I paid in. I want that money unless you're going to pay me in a lump sum, which might require raising the debt ceiling. But if you're going to pay me a lump sum for everything and that wouldn't, you know, I fully plan to exceed my life expectation by about, you know, two decades. So we'll see what happens. But so that money, they took it. So I want it back. You know, anyway, so constitutional budget. Are you joining our bandwagon, which is basically me right now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see what happens with that. And then, of course, the logical extension of that, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about anybody else, but as far as I'm concerned, the logical extension of advocating a constitutional budget is now that we have proved that 75% of the budget is unconstitutional, going to the Supreme Court and getting a Supreme Court lawsuit to them, having them opine an official opinion, because they don't make rulings, folks, they make opinions, but having the Supreme Court give an official opinion that the budget is in fact unconstitutional. Now, here's where that gets interesting. It's so obviously an open and shut case. The federal government is so obviously out of compliance with the Constitution by a factor of three. It's three times the amount spent is unconstitutional, 25% constitutional, 75% unconstitutional. That's a 3-to-1 ratio. All right. It's so blatantly obvious that they're going to have to squirm around it to either not take it or take it. The two justices I think would be most interested in this would be Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito. They're the ones I want to hear from. I don't care about the rest of them. They're a bunch of twiddlies anyway. You got liberal twiddlies and alleged conservative twiddlies. But the only two justices worth anything are Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas. But if we can get this to them, I'd be very curious what they would say. I wonder if I can get them on the show. Wouldn't that be cool? Hey, guys, we want to sue the in the Supreme Court that the budget's unconstitutional. I want you to rule that or opine that it's unconstitutional. So that's where we're going with that. And again, I don't want to speak for Gene, so you want to help us? Us being me. I'm going to start in the third person here, like Action Radio. Most of the stuff comes out of my crazy brain. But I think it's worth doing. I think it's worth pursuing. If for nothing else, to educate the public and find out who the real conservatives out there, the real patriots that would actually take this up, and who's on the federal gravy train, along with Catholic Charities and Lutheran and Episcopalian and Baptist and everybody else. Comments from yesterday, Gene?
Oh, yeah, that was I got her stuck again. No, I have no comment.
Okay. All right. Well, and this is, you know, and I ask for these comments, and it's not fair in a certain sense, but I'm always curious, just initial impressions. These are things I have thought through for years. I don't just suddenly pop on the air and say, well, I think I'll sue in the Supreme Court. You know, I don't wake up saying, oh, I think I'll write a constitutional budget. It doesn't happen that way. These things evolve. I mean, the initial idea, you know, pops into my head instantly, but the work after, you know, Einstein said, you know, it's 2% inspiration, 98% perspiration. So it's the 98% work, most of which I've already done before I present these ideas to all of you. That's how it works. Okay, so possibly we'll have our band at 7. We'll see. But if not, we're in a strange situation. So the question is that how do you nullify, isolate, and disempower the federal enemy government? There are a bunch of ways, and I've got an article on that. But I want to talk about something at first that happened yesterday on the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, for those of you that don't know, I spent 8 years as a San Francisco tour guide. And I used to – this is where I get a lot of, improv practice. This is what I can do with Russian accent, because I talked about the Russian hill in San Francisco where graves of Russians buried on top of hill. How can I do that? Because I was a tour guide for years. How can I do Yoda impressions? Forces with us. Young Padawan Gene, going to be Jedi one day you are. Anyway, how do I do that? Because I was a tour guide. You know, so all these little fun. So if I break into weird voices, again, it's practice. And these are kind of fun to do. But the thing was, we had to cross the Golden Gate Bridge, and I crossed it in motorized cable cars. Where this company, classic cable cars, they take an old San Francisco cable car, obsolete cable car, basically take the frame of it, plunk it onto a truck chassis, kind of bolt it on, you know, the engine, you know, and driver controls in there, and off you go. It was a very interesting craft. And we take these things over San Francisco, not in the biggest hills because they couldn't do it. Cable cars are a fascinating device. They actually run on a cable that runs under the street, and the cable car grabs onto the cable. Cable cars themselves don't have any motor or engine or power. That's how they work. They have a grip, and that grip grips onto the cable, and those grips last about 2 weeks. Then they have to replace them. Because the grabbing onto a steel cable with a steel grip, when the cable is moving 20 miles an hour, causes a lot of wear. And very quickly, the grips don't grip. And that's how they work. But, you know, it's mechanical. It's 1800s. What do you want? Point being through all this, that the Golden Gate Bridge is unbelievably beautiful and dangerous all at the same time, because there's no breakdown lane. Okay, they can't afford a breakdown lane. If they reduced it to 4 lanes, it would be jammed for hours. It was jammed for hours every Friday anyway. Because you got to figure, most of San Francisco, they work, you know, a lot of them are getting to work at 4:35 o'clock in the morning, because San Francisco is the financial center. It's got the Pacific Stock Exchange, which is connected to the New York Stock Exchange, which opens at 9 o'clock Eastern time, but that's 6 o'clock Pacific. Well, you can't just walk in when the market opens. You got to prep and call your customers and do things that brokers do, you know, go to breakfast, you know, probably start the 3-martini breakfast. I don't know what they do. But anyway, so the brokers go to San Francisco. So Starbucks is open early. The donut shops are open early, and off they go. And, you know, flower shops are open for the brokers that forget their spouses and partners. You know, everything's right there in San Francisco, right? So they go to work really early. And you can watch the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, early in the morning, you know, between about 3 and 5 o'clock, all the Mercedes, Lamborghinis, BMWs, you know, Lexus, all the luxury sedans driving across. Those are all the brokers. Yeah, they're doing really well. And so they drive across. And that's how they do it. But the Golden Gate Bridge, and then they all go home. But they go home after lunch. So. You know, if you start work at 5, you're probably done by 1, you know, maybe 2, all right? So that's how they do it. And so the bridge jams up on Fridays, if people are even working Fridays. A lot of people work 4 10-hour shifts. So the bridge will jam up starting at about noon on a Friday in the summertime as everybody's trying to get away. And the traffic is horrendous. There's not a good way to the Golden Gate Bridge. There's not a really quick way there because of the earthquake. The freeways got dismantled. And so now you have to kind of do a lot of background stuff to get there. And it's very easy to jam up. And so these illegal aliens, Okay, they call them undocumented workers in the article I'm going to get to in a second. These illegal aliens block traffic for like 20 minutes, demanding their rights, which they don't have, demanding citizenship, which, as far as I'm concerned, they should never be entitled to, but they block the Golden Gate. They block the freaking Golden Gate Bridge. What kind of morons do that? What kind of morons let them? I mean, why weren't these people immediately hauled out of their cars and arrested and their cars impounded? But that's what happened. Gene, have you ever crossed the Golden Gate Bridge?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it pretty?
It is, yeah. I'll never forget when I was in California, well, San Francisco, I was going to visit my friend in Sacramento. And all I kept thinking was, thank God I don't have to drive here because of, you know, the hills and all that. And then my friends ended up having surgery, so I had to rent a car and drive there instead of having them come and get me. So that was a good example of just watch what you
How'd you do on the hills?
I did okay, but yeah, it was nerve-wracking at first, but then it didn't take long. But yeah, it's interesting because I don't remember how long it's been since you lived there. It's been a few years, but I was there, gosh, maybe 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about 15 years ago. And so I would hate to think what it is like now, because back then it was a beautiful city. It was so cool with the trolleys and just the restaurants and just the different things there. And now when I see pictures of it, I'm like, this is so disheartening. Just what the left has allowed it to become.
Oh, no, that was intentional. They didn't allow it to happen. That was not a natural occurrence. You know, when I got to California, I got there in the mid-80s, and I drove out from Boston. And I was sick of the East Coast. I didn't like it. I wasn't having fun in Boston. And Boston's kind of weird. It's great to visit. I mean, it's a wonderful city to visit. But to live and work there, if you're not, you know, Boston Irish, Boston Italian, you know, if you don't have an ethnic group in the community behind you, it's very much like Europe. It's very much of a nationality and class city. And so to get anywhere, you have to know somebody. Whereas California, I found, was just the opposite. When I got to California in the 80s, you know, you still had the hippies running things. but they become managers, right? And so they didn't care who you were and where you were. They just cared that you could do your job. And they were willing to give opportunities far more than the people in Boston, who wanted to know your parents, your grandparents, where you came from, you know, your history and all that kind of stuff. And that's how they judge people. But on the West Coast, the beauty of the West Coast, the thing I loved about the West Coast the most was that you were free to be you. And that's the whole spirit. That was the spirit of California. California is a place where anybody could go and make something of their life. And I did. And then I left. Just, you know, I want to make something of my life here in Florida. But California was the crown jewel of this nation. It was the most beautiful, you know, especially the San Francisco Bay Area. Talk about a climate. It's 55 in the winter, 65 in the summer. When the fog rolls in, and it does, I mean, it literally, you can watch it rolling in, and the temperature will drop about 30 degrees. So somewhere, you know, early June, you know, when the fog starts, and then it happens every day till about mid-September. So June through September, you get this beautiful cooling fog, and it's crisp, clear, wonderful air that crossed the entire Pacific Ocean. So it's purified, and it's great. And then it carries, you know, any pollution, you know, over across the hills, and the East Bay gets it. But the city itself, you know, it's just incredible. They have this gorgeous Golden Gate Bridge, which is orange, right? And the reason it's called the Golden Gate Bridge is because it goes over the Golden Gate, okay? That entrance to the harbor, that entrance to San Francisco Bay, is the Golden Gate, gateway to the Gold Coast, Gold Country, the 49ers, all right, 1849, the Gold Rush. That's what this is all about. San Francisco is a product of the Gold Rush. In fact, underneath the city of San Francisco downtown, that flat area, that's reclaimed land. But under there is about 600 ships from the 1800s that were abandoned as everybody raced to the gold fields to strike it rich. The people that struck it the richest were the merchants in town, the saloon keepers, you know, the brothels, the shops that had the picks and shovels. They're the people that struck it rich during the gold rush, not the miners. The miners had a terrible time. But that's how it works. So the Golden Gate, you know, the bridge could be painted any color you wanted, and it would still be the Golden Gate. So it's not gold. That's the story behind that. But anyway, it's a critical artery. It's the only way to get across from San Francisco to Marin County, the very wealthy, the very snooty, you know, that's Barbara Boxer country, is Marin County. And so the way you get across it is the Golden Gate Bridge. Before, in the old days, they had ferries, which took forever. And the ferries rapidly ran out of the capacity to handle people, and people got impatient. That's why they started building both the Golden Gate Bridge and the Oakland Bay Bridge in 1932, and I think they were finished in 1936. These bridges were both built during the Depression with American steel, and they are still there. The new Bay Bridge, built from Chinese steel, the engineers won't even drive across it. It's just so horrendous. They don't even want anything to do with it. So my big fear, of course, is the big earthquake. I was there for the 89 earthquake, and we did fine. San Franciscans came out. You know, we all donated blood the next day to help our fellow San Franciscans who were trapped under the cypress structure that collapsed. We had an amazing time, and we did some great stuff. And to see that city go from, you know, when wine country, especially in the wintertime, you go up with your friends, you spend all day in wine country. You know, you can go get a mud bath in Calistoga when you're done, or take a glider ride up in Calistoga, have a nice dinner, and then drive home. You want to have a nice dinner to sober up because you've been drinking wine all day. You know, but and that's what we would do. And it was fabulous fun, and the beaches were gorgeous. And the people were friendly. And, yeah, they were multicultural. They were diverse. They were from all over the world. But they were there to be independent. They were there to seek their fortune. They were there to build something. And they're hippies. They didn't trust the government. All right? So, yeah, great people. So the biggest problem with San Francisco is the hippies don't have power anymore. The socialists do. And the socialists are the government. So you've gone from the people that question authority to the people that are the authority. And that's what's happened in San Francisco. And they don't care. We had Republican administrators. I'm not talking about Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger's a globalist Marxist. But, I mean, really boring governors, the people you've never heard of, like Pete Wilson and George Duke Machen. They were administrators. They built reservoirs. They built power plants, nuclear ones. They built freeways. They actually did infrastructure. They took care of California. They administered it. And it was a great state. And then Schwarzenegger and crew, from then on, it went downhill. And now you have people thinking of San Francisco as an open restroom.
Yeah.
So you can see me being upset with the Golden Gate thing. Yeah. Okay. Let me get to this article here. And this is the first of our many that time goes by faster. This is why I'm glad you're here, because otherwise I'm talking to myself and doing a monologue unless somebody calls. But this is much more fun. And most people listen. It's not that we don't have a lot of listeners. We just don't have a lot of callers. And that's normal for most radio shows. You know, they get a few calls, but they have a million listeners. Okay, so that's how it works. All right. This is from Daily Caller. This is from yesterday. Protesters of support of illegal aliens who have no right to be here block the Golden Gate Bridge. And this is by Nicole Silverio, contributor, September 30th, Daily Caller. She says, here we go. Demonstrators blocked traffic on San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge Thursday, calling on Senate Democrats, of course, they don't call them Republicans, right? Senate Democrats to pass a provision granting a pathway to citizenship for, they say, undocumented immigrants. Well, first of all, they're not immigrants because they weren't invited, and they're certainly not undocumented. Everybody, Josie has told us over and over again, everybody in Central and South America gets a birth certificate. So they're not undocumented. They left their documents. These are document abandoned. This is what they are, or abandoned document illegal aliens. All right. Article goes on. Organized by the Movement for Citizenship for All, and that says Papeles para Todos, and the Bay Area Coalition for Economic Justice and Citizenship for All, dozens of illegal alien mothers, students, and allies exited their cars with banners and Spanish chants with demands for immigration reform at around 7 o'clock in the morning, San Francisco Chronicle reported. All right. Guess what, Gene? I want to go through this article, but if you can do me a huge favor, let's look up both the Movement for Citizenship for All, Papeles para Todos, that's P-A-P-E-L-E-S, para, P-R-A, todos, and then when you have that one, take your time, I'm gonna continue with the article, and then we'll get to the Coalition for Economic Justice.
Movement
for Citizenship for All. So I'll continue with the article, and we'll get to the second group here. So it says the demonstrations responded to the Senate's parliamentarians Wednesday rejection of the Democrats' provision into the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package that isn't a reconciliation package. That's the one they say doesn't cost anything, okay? Intended to grant amnesty to nearly 11 million illegal aliens in the U.S., CNN reports, okay? Well, amnesty? No. Deportation? Yes. Anyway, the demonstrators, in other words, illegal aliens that have no right to be here, blocked incoming traffic on the bridge until about 8 o'clock. That's a long time. 7 to 8? That's an hour? That's about a 5-hour backup to clear, just to let you know, in San Francisco. Traffic is horrendous there. It's another reason I left. I like traffic in Milton and Pensacola. It's kind of nice here. Anyway, so the demonstrator illegal aliens blocked incoming traffic on the bridge until about 8, risking the chance of arrest or deportation. Why were they risking it? Why isn't it automatic arrest and deportation? But that's just me. The San Francisco Chronicle reported law enforcement, who arrived at around 7:15, issued a handful of citations to protesters, but reportedly made no arrests. See, this is why they do it. Okay, so you got people that are illegally in the country that purposely left their documentation behind, that are demanding citizenship, demanding, okay, that are not doing anything to earn it, like, you know, go to the American embassy in their country and fill out, you know, an application, okay? So this is the problem. So this is only the beginning. Let me state this for the record. This is only the beginning of all those folks that came in, and I guarantee you a lot of those people that were on that bridge blocking traffic are newly arrived across what was our southern border. Guarantee it. But guess what? The socialist San Franciscans, the Marxist mayors, you know, and the city council told the police to make, I'm sure they did. They don't say this, but look, they blocked the bridge for an hour, illegal aliens, foreigners, invaders in our country blocked the Golden Gate Bridge, inconveniencing. Oh, I don't know what. I mean, did anybody give birth, you know, during that time when they blocked the bridge? I mean, that's what happened. That's what happens with these protests. Did anybody die in an ambulance who would need critical care? We don't know. But that's what happens too, okay? So you think blocking the bridge is a protest? Well, we're going to inconvenience these people. No, you kill people when you do that, okay? I know it's happened. I don't know if it happened this time, but I know it has happened. So that's the problem. It says demonstrators say they are standing up for the rights of immigrants. Okay, folks, let me get this really clear. Immigrants have no rights, okay, until they're officially legally invited into the country. You know, if you're in process, if you filled out your papers, you still have no rights, okay? Until you're granted immigrant status, until you're actually allowed into the country legally, and you get your green card, and you get permanent residency, you are not an immigrant, and you do not have rights in this country. Illegal aliens have no rights because they have no right to be here. And we're talking about citizenship jurisdiction, not geographical. Just because they're in the United States does not make them American, does not make them a pathway to American, does not mean they have any claim on our citizenship whatsoever. They are under the jurisdiction of the country of their birth, citizenship, and that's not us if they're illegal aliens. Okay. Let's get back to Jean. As soon as she comes back here, we'll find out what this group is, because I'm kind of curious. It's actually a rather short article. So let's get papeles para todos.
Okay, hold on. When I put it in, it came up sovereign citizen movement. So
no, that's totally different.
But that's what I put in even on DuckDuckGo.
Movement for Citizenship for All came up sovereign citizen? No, there's something wrong here. Yeah. All right, try the Spanish version. Papeles para todos.
Okay, you're going to have to spell that again.
Sure. P-A-P-E-L-E-S.
Hold on, P-A-P-E-L.
P-A-P-E-L-E-S.
Yep.
Papeles para, P-A-R-A, and todos, T-O-D-O-S. This is where we need Josie. Josie, help us out here. Give me a call. But papeles para todos. And then we'll look up Bay Area Coalition for Economic Justice and Citizenship for All.
Okay.
Think about that.
Cool.
All is a very big word, folks. Okay. All is a lot of people. All right. All is like, you know, many. All right. I guess my band's not calling in. Musicians, what are you going to do? All right. So give that a chance to do it. I'll get the last little paragraph here. It says here's a quote from DACA recipient. All right. This is somebody whose parents brought them in illegally. Okay. If your parents brought you in illegally, I don't fault you for having your parents brought in here illegally until your 18th birthday, and then you become an adult, and then you're responsible for what happens. If you're in the country, if you came to this country as a child, I do not fault you for that. If you stayed in this country as an adult, you're an illegal alien. It's just that simple, and you need to go home. Okay. Oh, but this is the only country they know. Oh, that's BS. You think your parents didn't teach them? You think the parents didn't teach these kids about their home country? You think these parents didn't take them back to visit their families several times during their childhood? Don't think for a second that these people don't know their home country. Don't think that for a second. They're here for the money and the benefits because they're not here to be Americans, so they would have come legally. See, that's the difference. If they were here to be Americans, if they were here to assimilate to U.S. culture, if they were here to help this country, they would have come legally. The fact that they came illegally means they're here for themselves. What you got, Jean?
Well, a lot of it's in Spanish, which I cannot read.
Yeah. You know what you could do? Get the translation. Well, let's look up the other group. Let's try that. So obviously these people don't want to be known about. So let's find the other one here. Bay Area Coalition for Economic Justice and Citizenship for All. That's like the Pledge of Allegiance, isn't it? One nation under God with liberty and justice for all. I think that's what they're trying to copy here. You want that title again? That's a, it's a long one.
hold on, I got out of there. I've got it. Oh boy, I had something.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you a hand here. I'm going to look this one up too myself. So
this
is
crazy.
I made a copy of that. Let's pull up my Safari window.
What it says is they want citizenship for all.
Uh-huh. Is that special? No, that's illegal. You can't do that. So screw you, group. All right. Where's this group here? Yeah, I love this. Immigrants' rights advocates. Yeah. It doesn't say what the group is. I should put .com. Let's put that in there. No, that's not going to work. I don't know. Yeah. When I do a search, all I get is the bridge protest. I don't get a group. Oh, here we go. Refugees, local organizations. Oh, there you go. So all your refugees, you get to go. Yeah, here's the way to go. I don't see anything here on this group. This might require a little bit of research. I'll leave it to you to find out more about these people. But anyway, that's the situation. So that happened yesterday. Interesting. All right, let's see if I can play you something else. This would be a good time to actually play our 10 Rows of Volunteers piece for the week. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk about this article briefly. I'll probably pick it up maybe in the last little bit. We don't know if Chappie's going to call in. Donnie Chapman is at a shooting match today, so he may or may not be able to call in depending on what's going on at the shooting match. Hopefully we'll hear something. But in the meantime, let me share our 10 Rows of Volunteers piece. This week it's on Anti-Federalist number 5. And we'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The pompous, arrogant, elitist John Jay, who wrote Federalist Paper No. 5, has such complete contempt for the American people that he obviously wants to rule over the people for their own good with his strong national constitution. However, the rebuttal in Anti-Federalist No. 5 is just the opposite. It is simple, short, honest, straightforward, takes John Jay's writing head on, and makes complete hash of John Jay's weak propaganda. Anti-Federalist No. 5 was written and signed by an anonymous author known only as An Observer. Whoever it is appeals to my sense of logic and reason to take on the elitist and powerful through quiet ridicule where you are making total fun of them, but it's not so obviously apparent to them. This is probably the easiest of my discussions of any founding document because all I have to do is mention some select quotes to show you how An Observer turns John Jay's writing into mush. John Jay began Federalist No. 5 with the claim that the Union of Scotland and England should be the model of our states, and that a letter from Queen Anne to the Scotch Parliament would be the convincing evidence. An Observer writes, "It is a certainty that when the Union was the subject of debate in the Scottish legislature, some of their most sensible and disinterested nobles, as well as commoners, who were not corrupted by English gold, violently opposed the Union and predicted that the people of Scotland would, in fact, derive no advantages from a consolidation of government with England, but on the contrary, they would bear a great proportion of her debt and furnish large bodies of men to assist in her wars with France, with whom, before the Union, Scotland was at all times on terms of the most cordial amity." It appears quite clear that the Union envisioned by John Jay is based on force and subjugation. No wonder John Jay became our first Supreme Court Chief Justice. The elites were already moving in shortly after the ratification of the Constitution. An Observer further observes, "It deserves also to be remembered that the people of Scotland, in the late war between France and Great Britain, petitioned to have arms and ammunition supplied them by their general government for their defense, alleging that they were incapable of defending themselves and their property from an invasion unless they were assisted by government. It is a truth that their petitions were disregarded and reasons were assigned that it would be dangerous to entrust them with the means of defense as they would then have it in their power to break the Union. This definitely portends a future U.S. where the government would have all the arms and the people defenseless, all in order that the national government remain in power. In describing this absurd example in Federalist No. 5, an observer states, "From this representation of the situation of Scotland, surely no one can draw any conclusion that this country would derive happiness or security from a government which would, in reality, give the people but the mere name of being free." The last paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 5 is so good, there is no explanation that is needed, so let me close with this from an observer. "I observe that the writer above mentioned takes great pains to show the disadvantages which would result from 3 or 4 distinct confederacies of these states. I must confess that I have not seen, in any of the pieces published against the proposed Constitution, anything which gives the most distant idea that their writers are in favor of such governments. But it is clear these objections arise from a consolidation not affording security for the liberties of their country, and from hence it must evidently appear that the design of Publius, in artfully holding up to public view the bugbear of such confederacies, can be with no other intention than willfully to deceive his fellow citizens." Publius is what John Jay called himself in the Federalist Papers. Going on, "I am confident it must be, and that it is, the sincere wish of every true friend to the United States, that there should be a confederated national government, but that it should be one which would have a control over national and external matters only, and not interfere with the internal regulations and police of the different states in the Union. Such a government, while it would give us respectability abroad, would not encroach upon or subvert our liberties at home." The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from foundingfathersquotes.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. All right, we're back. It's, I don't know how many minutes. I've never given time checks. I probably should. This is my old radio habit here. 7:13 here in the morning. And so we are live broadcasting in the Central Time Zone, Milton, Florida. And Gene, way up north, same time zone, though. You folks on the East Coast, you're an hour ahead of us. Then you should have been up earlier and listening. Anyway. One of my favorite news sources is one that I can't possibly publish on social media. It's banned immediately, which means it must be pretty good. And that would be Natural News. And Natural News, defending health, life, and liberty. And this is Mike Adams, who I've been trying to get on the show for, I don't know, about 2 years now. The title of the article that sort of gave me the idea for the show today, he says, "To survive, red states must now nullify the federal government and declare themselves health freedom zones that denounce the FDA, CDC, and OSHA." This is an interesting concept. I'm going to explore this more because that's something that might require some citizen legislation. We're already declaring ourselves here in Santa Rosa County an illegal alien free zone, and we're doing that using asset forfeiture. And so I'm still I'm working with the county commissioners who reportedly support this, but I think they need some nudging. So that's what we do. We nudge. Hey, guys. Okay, you support it. All right, let's pass it. Let's take a stand here. And that would be historic. But I'll talk to to Mike about that and say, hey, let's write some citizen legislation here. Let's not just talk about it. I kind of like that idea now. I didn't really thought of that before, but that has possibilities. Make a note to myself, Mike Adams. Don't mind me. I'm just goofing around here. I can't do that because I got a gig. Normally Saturday I do a lot of work, but Saturday I think I'm busy with our first show here. So let's put that on the calendar for Monday, Mike Adams. There we go. All right. So he starts. He says, "Natural News." Well, Natural News is the name of the of his website. He says, "With illegitimate occupier in chief Joe Biden, as I call him, thief in chief, occupier in chief is kind of the same thing, waging outright war and economic terrorism against the red states. I don't like the term red states. Okay, I use it out of convention." But red is the communist country color. It always has been. Everything about China and Russia is red. Red, 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 red. Red is the color of Marxists, okay? So Bill Clinton, in one of the most brilliant political propagandistic moves, changed the perceptions of people. He said the blue states were Democratic and the red states were those conservative Republicans, when in reality, the Republicans are the blue states, or actually the red, white, and blue states. The Democrats are the red states. So I'm not even going to use that term anymore. Let's say against the real states. That was really infuriated the Democrats. Okay. The leaders of those real states must now nullify federal government overreach in order to prevent their own citizens from being mass murdered by D.C. swamp policies that are intentionally designed to achieve depopulation. Okay. You all got that, folks? He's saying they're trying to kill us, all right? And this is, I mean, we have now joined the ranks of everybody else in the world where the greatest enemy we have, the greatest cause of unnatural death is our own government. And that is clearer now than it ever has been. It didn't used to be that way. We didn't used to be like those other countries. And now, thanks to the thief in chief, the occupier in chief, the Biden insurrection, the traitors, the communists, the Marxists that are all part of the deep state, this is where we are. So he says some of the ways the Biden regime is waging war on real estates includes economic terrorism. Gee, where have you heard that term before? Hey, Gene, have you heard that term before? Have I been using it all week? I didn't say economic terrorism. I said economic treason. Okay, same thing. Economic terrorism, unleashing OSHA to destroy all businesses.
I've never heard it before.
Oh, what? Terrorism or economic treason? Either one? Oh, she's gone again. She's working on stuff.
Neither one. Yeah. In the way that you say it.
Okay, well, I've been using economic treason for a while, ever since I did this whole thing on the last time the federal government said that they had to meet their obligations by raising the debt ceiling, and I said the same thing then. They lowered their obligations to meet the debt ceiling. That's you don't raise the debt ceiling to meet the obligations. You lower the obligations to meet the debt ceiling. That's why it's called a debt ceiling. It's not a debt express elevator, which is the way it's being treated. All right. Let me start again here. Economic terrorism, unleashing OSHA to destroy all businesses that won't enforce vaccine mandates by levying fines of $70,000 per day or higher. Next point, engineered medicine shortages. Biden recently announced the restrictions on shipping monoclonal antibodies to real states in order to maximize COVID fatalities in those states. That would be Florida and Texas primarily. Vaccine mandates, which aren't vaccine mandates, they're spike protein infusions. Through vaccine mandates, Biden is committing medical genocide against every American, working to achieve a mass die-off that will leave states in a worsening economic crisis and humanitarian crisis as the deaths unfold. Well, it's bad and it's getting worse. I mean, the greatest health problem we face right now is a vaccine mandate. I mean, obviously. In fact, the COVID cases are dropping. You know, if you look around, the CDC says COVID cases are dropping. You know what else is dropping? The amount of people who are getting vaccinated. Gee, what a surprise, okay? Remember when COVID was dropping last year, August through December, the COVID cases were dropping like crazy. It should have been over. What happened in December? Vaccines were rolled out, all right? And what happened then? COVID cases spiked. Do you see the connection yet? So now that most people who want it, so all the voluntary compliant people, all the sheep, they've got their shots, all right? And they're the ones going to the hospitals. But the vast majority of people that are standing strong say, no, I want to remain DNA normal. I want to stay as God created me, not as Pfizer wants to modify me. Those, all of us, you know, we're not getting the shot. And we're also not getting COVID either. Okay? So this is quite fascinating, but that's what's going on. So as the vaccination rate declines, the COVID rate declines correspondingly. As the vaccination rate increased, the COVID rate increased. If you can't see the pattern, you're not looking. Or you're just blind, or you don't want to. I'm surprised Bumperjack hasn't said something by now. Anyway, border invasion. Another, next point. The Biden regime and its corrupt DOJ, that's Department of Justice, are actively fighting against sensible border security, openly allowing a land invasion of states like Texas and Arizona in order to flood the nation with replacement Democrat voters. Didn't I talk about the great replacement? That was last Friday's show. Okay, so Mike, I got to talk to Mike Adams. We're really in sync here because I said President Nobody and the Great American Replacement. If you look at what the left is doing, if for Americans, abortion. For illegal aliens, a pathway to citizenship. Does anybody see the connection? Okay, that's a replacement program. They're replacing Americans with a compliant peasant class that does not know freedom, that doesn't care about this country, that has no allegiance to this country, that's here for your stuff. Okay, I couldn't be clearer about that. That's what's going on. It's just that simple. These folks need to be tried for treason. All right. Aid and comfort to the enemy. I consider illegal aliens an enemy invading army. Just because they're not in uniform doesn't mean they're not an enemy invading army. Sponsor our own government. Kind of like giving weapons to the Taliban while our soldiers are dying. Next point. Money printers. Every dollar printed by the Fed and distributed by the Treasury is actually an instrument of debt that steals purchasing power from the hardworking Americans who produce things. Those producers tend to live in, you know, real states, while blue states are the welfare states where more people get handouts that were essentially stolen from the producers in the real states. Gee, I think, Gene, do you think you'd like our last 2 day shows with the constitutional budget? Everything he's saying, I mean, I read this quickly, but, you know, the more I look at it the second time going through this, the more I realize we're saying exactly the same thing. This is fascinating. Next point, election rigging. Biden and other Democrats like Newsom, that's California, that's the recall, all right, are now institutionalizing never-ending election rigging, which I would call fraud, in order to make sure the will of the people is never honored in an election. Although their own disastrous policies are wildly unpopular, they can continue to maintain power by cheating in elections, just like they cheated in 2020. If you don't pick 2020, there is no 2022. I'm telling you now. Because they didn't do it, the geldings didn't watch the recall, didn't fix it, didn't do anything about it, weren't in the post offices of watching union Democrat people handle the ballots because they weren't there. Gavin Newsom's still in power, and California is being ruined. It's the fault of both the Democrats and the Republicans. They're both equally to blame. One for doing it and the other for letting them. All right, next point. Got just two more here, and we'll get to Derek in a little bit. Outlawing the medicine that works. Haven't we talked about this since March 2nd of 2020? Huh? He says, notice how the D.C. swamp has attacked ivermectin and makes sure no hospital prescribes it to patients. This is also part of the medical genocide agenda, and it's a war on humanity. Next point, punitive taxation under the Biden regime, which is actually run by Obama. Hey, there's another familiar theme. Okay, the IRS will be handed a mandate to raise taxes on productive American workers, punishing them for having jobs, all while handing out more welfare and entitlements to the illegals who are allowed to invade America by the hundreds of thousands each month. Article goes on, a long chain of abuses. These are all acts of war against real states in particular and against the American people in general. Any state that follows the death recipe will go down with the collapse of America, exactly as long planned by O'Biden. You know, Obama has been working toward the total collapse of the USA since he gained power in 2008. He is now the one running Biden. Okay, so I definitely want to talk about that. I'd love to see some evidence. I don't know if there is any, but if he's got it, you know, hopefully he can share it. Red states must now denounce and ignore the FDA, CDC, OSHA, and the other federal agencies that have been weaponized against the people. See, I've long said this too. You know, a Supreme Court decision that they have no authority to make does not have to be followed. Of course, the prime example is Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade is not a law. It's not a policy. It's nothing. It's an opinion. Okay. Supreme Court makes opinions. Okay. Opinions are not law. The opinions of the Supreme Court are only enforceable on the parties to the case. And that would be Roe and Wade. And Norman McCorvey, who was Roe, has long since, you know, come out publicly that, you know, she would not do what she did then. You know, and so she's now pro-life, which is fascinating. All right. Article says, to survive the planned culling, that's killing of the excess, okay, of the American population, the real states must take a stand and publicly denounce the FDA, CDC, OSHA, and other weaponized federal agencies, ATF. Yeah. You know, all these things he's recommending, we've been doing. We've been doing these since we started here at Action Radio, you know, December 24th of 2018. That's when we started this show. I started WBY March 1st of 2017. So I've been doing exactly what he's talking about here for 5 years this March, just to let you know. The FDA serves big pharma, not public health or safety. The CDC is the criminal cartel, deeply engaged in depopulation crimes against humanity. OSHA is now preparing to commit economic terrorism against America's small businesses with insane daily fines. The ATF is a gun-running organization. Remember Operation Fast and Furious? Yeah, we do. That seeks to destroy the Second Amendment. You can probably think of other examples yourself. Oh, yeah. The Department of Education is designed to make people stupid. I can probably think of more, you know, while I'm here. The Department of Justice is a secret police force, arresting people for political crimes as they envision them. That's why those people are in jail for simply walking through the White House on January 6th. Yeah, I can think of a bunch more. Back to the article. To survive and thrive, real states must declare themselves to be health, freedom, sanctuary states. Oh, this is interesting. I got to talk to this guy. Okay, I know what I'm doing next week. I've already got next week already planned out. Okay. He says, health, freedom, sanctuary states that recognize the value of ivermectin, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutritional medicine, and traditional Chinese medicine, along with other healing arts. We must purge big pharma from its influence peddling. Okay, we already have a bill to do that, folks. And I'll give it to Mike Adams to say, look, Dr. Zelenko and I wrote an FDA overhaul for emergency use authorization. So all these things he's talking about, we've already done. He thinks he's breaking – this is why it's going to be so fascinating. He thinks he's breaking news. He thinks he's breaking, you know, all kinds of new information and new stuff. But he doesn't know that we've already done this. We've done all of this already. We just haven't gotten known for it yet, but we will. See, if Mike Adams does an article on us, we'll take a quantum leap in listenership, which is exactly what I'm aiming for. At the same time, he says, these states must also declare themselves to be First Amendment sanctuary states while blocking YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Vimeo, Google and other big tech tyrants from operating in those states until they agree to abide by First Amendment principles of free speech. No, I disagree. I mean, we have a lawsuit right now in Florida. No, I think I have a better way. Okay. And the better way is to amend Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. And that's the part that gives big tech the ability to make the decisions of what is offensive and what isn't. Okay. So what you do is you, and I've already done this in law, you look up our bill, you know, amending Section 230, and what it does is it takes away the power. It reverses that power. It says, no, that they, you know, it just basically removes that authority for them to have anything to do with, quote, offensive material. It actually, the language puts in a wall of separation between the providers of internet, I forgot what they call it, internet connective services or something like that, whatever they call it. There's a word for you know, where there's a provider and a user, all right? So it's an I think it's called interactive computer services, okay? So social media, big tech, search engines, that's all interactive computer services. So my bill simply puts a wall between the provider and the user, much like the wall between AT&T and people who use landlines, okay? AT&T does not relate in any way what you say on the phone. However, If you call for treason or capital crimes or if you call for harm to the president, we're not doing that here, folks. So those of you who want to report us to the FBI, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying those that say that on the phone are still liable to the federal laws regarding, you know, protecting the president and all those kind of things. All right. And so those laws are already there. So AT&T doesn't have to police the phone lines because there's already authority in other places in law that if you say things that are offensive, treasonous, dangerous, or threaten the president, you can get arrested for what you say on the phone. Okay? In the same way, the obscenity laws that already exist take care of what you say on social media. So there is absolutely no reason to give social media any power at all to do anything with the internet other than provide the service of search engines and social media. In the same way. And that's our solution. That's our Section 230 bill, which rewrites Section 230, saying there's a wall of separation. I use those words intentionally because everybody quotes Jefferson on that. There's a wall of separation between the providers and users of interactive computer services, and there's no reason for any type of offense or community standards or fact checks or anything like that, because all the offensive stuff is handled by the obscenity laws. So let's just take a break for a second here. We've got Derek in a minute, and we'll definitely take a break then. I'm almost done. Well, let me just finish this last little bit here. States must prepare their own currencies to get ready for the coming dollar collapse. I disagree, but I'll say what he says anyway. As part of this nullification effort, 10th Amendment, states must prepare to roll out their own currencies when the dollar collapses. That's actually unconstitutional, by the way. We have a uniform currency, which he says, which now looks to be close at hand, with brain-dead Biden and the Democrats now absurdly claiming that $3.5 trillion in new government spending costs $0. We went over that earlier, too. And adds zero to government debt. Yeah, that too. We have truly reached the blowout phase of the dollar collapse, and the total demise of the dollar isn't far away. See, I don't agree. All right. He says soon they will be printing $1 trillion a week and then moving forward $1 trillion a day. Nah, I don't think so. But I think it's worth – but I think everything else I thought that we need to go to a constitutional budget. He says any state that isn't prepared to introduce its own currency when the dollar implodes will find its own citizens and economy literally collapsing into near instant ruin. Importantly, only a gold-backed currency will be trusted by the citizens in the aftermath of the collapse of the dollar. And the total ruin of every person holding dollar-denominated bank accounts, U.S. stocks, treasury bills, dollar debt amounts, etc. Gee, the illegal aliens will lose their illegal money. Isn't that interesting? He says it is now clear that nullification is a matter of survival. We either nullify the treacherous, treasonous federal overreach, or we allow Biden to sink us all. And he's talking about, he says, see in full detail today's Situation Update podcast, which covers China's power grid emergency, why both China and the corrupt U.S. leadership want World War III, more deaths of pro-vaccine people who mocked anti-vaxxers as stupid morons, OSHA's economic terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that goes on there. All right, so that's basically everything that I wanted to say on that. Interesting article, huh? I'm going to bring Jean back in the conversation here. Let's see what she's been working on. There we go. Let's do that here and that here. Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Right. Bumperjack just has a question. He wants to know how many bills you sponsored that have been successful. Yeah, I know you've had some, Action Radio has had some that have been.
Well, if he's talking about success in terms of being passed, we have not passed one yet. But that's not surprising, okay? Because what we're doing is so new. There's a huge education process. I don't expect to pass a lot of bills early. The best shot we have right now is one where we have a bill in the Santa Rosa County Commission create an illegal alien free zone here in Santa Rosa County. We had a fairly decent shot. Actually, I had a better shot of passing bills back when I was at WBY because we had they already had established connections with Matt Gaetz. He was calling the show regularly. We had a great chance to talk to folks, you know, there. And talk to him directly and get things into Congress, particularly the citizenship mandatory citizenship question on the census. So when I went to Blog Talk, I had to start over again, and so it was a huge setback, huge. But it's going to actually work out better in the long run because we're going to get a far bigger audience. We have a worldwide audience now. It's just not as big as I want. But as we get more and more listeners, we're going to have more and more impact on the national debate. Looks like we got a couple of calls here, but what I want to do is, if you want to. You know, and it's interesting when he talks about how many bills have been successful. See, to me, a successful bill is one that we've written with a new idea that nobody else has thought of. It's a success to me if people start talking about it. It's a success if people start sharing it. When we have a bill that brings about full product liability to vaccine manufacturers, that's already a success because nobody else is doing it. So in that respect, all our bills are successful because we are breaking new ground here. We are the first radio show in history to write its own legislation, advocate it, and have a citizen legislature, and to be able to teach people how to work that citizen legislature. So in that respect, we're amazingly successful because no one else has done what we're doing. We're still here and we're growing. But this is an education process. But once we start passing bills, it's going to come pretty quickly. You're going to see a lot of bills out there get passed as we get more and more successful, as you say. But people ask that question, well, you're nothing unless you pass bills. See, bill passing is the last phase of what we do. The first phase is education, and then it's changing the national debate, and then it's getting all our bills shared on media and throughout the nation, and then getting them submitted to the various legislatures, and then passage. Passage is not the initial goal, but it's certainly it's in there. It's passage is the end goal. All right, let's talk money, and I'll be right back. Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money. So that was a good question by Bumper Jack, but perception and understanding what we do here. is the real answer. So keep listening. Keep asking me questions. I really appreciate having you on the live chat line. If anybody else wants to do it, just scroll to the bottom of your page that you're listening to right now. There it is. Just get yourself a free account, and you too can be a keyboard warrior. Oh, boy. Derek, this is the first week of our three-hour shows, and we're like halfway into it. I'm already a wreck. It's been an amazing first hour and a half. How you doing, sir?
Man, you're gonna have to take some medicine to control your pulse rate.
Why, are you kidding? This is exciting for me. This is my relaxation. This is how I chill, dude.
It causes heart disease, man, for some people.
No. My heart's just fine. I had surgery. Yeah, no, I'm chilling. And actually, you know, when you think about it, this is actually a stress reliever. This is my outlet. I get to say whatever I want, you know, and if people don't like what I say, I'm going to be off the air really fast. So obviously I'm saying things that people are going, wow, gee, that's different. I never thought of that. So in terms of right. of my outlet, you know, and this is a chance for you, too, to be able to say things as Derek Park, as opposed to, you know, the representation. You know, we do the official report, and then, you know, you take off your hat, and then we get to talk. And so this is an outlet. And for Jim, you know, Jim Dykes is a director of Florida Carry. Anybody who's on the show, it's an outlet. It's a chance to say things that in a lot of places you can't. And so this is kind of like our therapy here. So let's get into some economic therapy. And we got Josie on the line too. I'm going to bring her on. I think she may have wanted to talk about what we talked about previously. But let's get into the economic stuff, and then I'll bring her on as well. So let's get the official report.
Good morning,
and,
everybody.
Yeah, there we go. Go for it, sir.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Derek Park of Ever-Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. U.S. markets closed lower with the S&P 500 index down 1.2% and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.5%. Notably, the technology-heavy NASDAQ held up better, only down 0.4% as the 10-year Treasury yield backed down a bit to 1.51%. Value sectors underperformed growth sectors in a reversal in the past week's action. Energy and financial stock, some of the recent outperformers are lagging today, perhaps weighing in on the overall index. These moves also come as markets await the final measure to avoid the U.S. government shutdown today as we close to the final trading day of the month and the quarter. Here, U.S. equities closed lower with the Dow Jones down 547 points or 1.59% to 33,844. NASDAQ index closed down 64 points or 44% to 14,449. And the S&P closed down 52 points or 1.2% to 43,08. Again, in the bond market, the 10-year Treasury yield was down 0.03% to 1.451%. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up 27 cents or 0.36% to $75.10. And the spot price of gold was up $33.90 or 1.97% to $17.56.80. Again, this is Derek Park with Edward Jones, member SIPC. You can get us at 850-995-0082.
What's the price of oil? You didn't give that.
$75.10.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right. Yeah, gold and oil are kind of like my benchmarks, and which direction they're going makes a big difference. Okay. First of all, just technical note, if you can get a little closer to your phone or microphone or whatever you're using, I want to try and boost your volume. I'm trying to always equalize because I got this big, powerful microphone, which I'm backing away from further and further, but I want to try and get our voices as close to equal as we can. A little, but that's okay.
I'm I've got a thing going on this morning. I needed my hand, so I'm using my Bluetooth earpiece. So
okay, no, it's fine. It's not bad. I'm just we'll listen to the podcast. Yeah. I just want because I always thought everybody's signals would be as clear as possible. Okay, let's talk about the big lie, and the big lie is that the government has to shut down because we have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligation. And there's one lone voice, guess who, screaming at the top of my lungs that if you lower the obligations, you can actually meet the debt ceiling and you don't have to shut down the government or even think about it. How come nobody, and I mean nobody except us, is screaming and yelling that this is so simple to do? You know, you just, and we went over this, I just want to take a second here real quick, but we went over this very carefully the last 2 days. One, when I talked about a constitutional budget, and yesterday, you probably get a kick out of this, that I want to take the federal budget to the Supreme Court and get it ruled unconstitutional. When you get over laughing about that, I'll talk to you about it. But the idea, the big lie is that we have to meet our obligations. We have to raise the debt ceiling. Otherwise, we'll default. No, you don't, you stupid morons. Don't try and tell me that BS, was it blow smoke up my butt? Doesn't work that way, all right? What you have to do is lower the obligations, because anything Congress spends, they can unspend. Anything Congress authorizes, they can unauthorize. Anything Congress passes, they can repeal or abolish. Any spending that they do that they now require more borrowing for, they can get rid of that more borrowing by simply ending the spending in the first place. But they don't want to do that. They want to keep spending. They want to keep raising the debt limit because, as Nancy Pelosi said, it's about values. This is about values. It doesn't matter how much money we spend. It's about values. These are our values. Well, what's your value? Economic treason? Economic terrorism? Bankruptcy? National suicide? End of rant.
Right. If you ask a person, though, you know, I mean, this, you could break it down to the, you know, micro level, and you walked up to an individual and you said, hey, for the common person, you know, would you save more? You know, would you continue to spend and put yourself into bankruptcy? Or would you, you know, try to take care of your own well-being? Most people would say, yeah, I'll try to take care of my own well-being. I'll save. Mm-hmm. I won't spend too much. I'll live below my means so I can have, you know, a good bit of savings later on in my life, right? Or for my goals or whatnot. Well, how come the government's not like that? You know what I mean? The government is just like, okay, let's spend. But everybody at Congress is like, hey, how can I get rich off of this? You know, so it's like, I don't know why people think that this is okay. You know, I've given the analogy many a times. Like, if you had sewage running into your house, what would you do? Right. Get the sewage out or raise the roof? You know, and
move upstairs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's serious. You know, I mean, like,
no, that's,
you know, you
example.
Have to keep in mind your government doesn't want to spend less. They want to tax you more. What does that tell you about your government? You know, like, and
they're dangerous.
You know, look, I've people would argue that, you know, taxing is theft and taxing is not fair. You know, I mean, municipalities would never run if you didn't have taxes. And, you know, I mean, I think that we need, like, you know, the police force, the fire department, schools and things like that. So, I mean, the tax system has to be there in some way, shape or form if you want public services. Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. But how do you keep those at a minimum? You know, and how do you keep those? You know, and I mean, I think you and I both talked, you know, I mean, I'm kind of one of these flat tax kind of guys.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and then that everybody pays the same, you know. You know, people can argue that won't work, it's unfair, you know, I mean, but when you do the math on it, it ends up being fair because everybody pays their fair share. If you make more, you end up paying more.
Yeah, if I make 10% at 100,000 and you know, Trump pays 10% at a billion, you know, we're still paying 10%. What's not fair? I know what
that's right, right, right.
You can afford more.
That's about as equitable as it becomes. And then the fact that the government's going to shut down, like you said, that's a bunch of cockamamie BS. The bottom line is they can meet their obligations. They just have to shortchange other things, maybe potentially their paycheck, since they can't come to an agreement. Yeah. You know, so maybe start with their paychecks. And, you know, I mean, I know, what was it, 2014, 2013, government shut down for like 2 months because they couldn't come up. They had to raise the debt ceiling. I mean, I was active duty at that time, man, and I had 2 months that I got weird little paychecks and chunky stuff. And, you know, it was just, I mean, I had soldiers that, you know, were living paycheck to paycheck. You know, I mean, I was blessed to be a more senior person and didn't have to worry about that because I was a little bit more financially stable. But, you know, these young guys that are like, hey, what am I going to do? You know, it's just, you know, I mean, I've got family members and client calling me now saying, hey, what do I do if my Social Security doesn't come in? And then I'm like, you know, well, you know, that's my job to help you figure that out. You know, so, you know, it's kind of sad that they'll punish Americans for their inability to make decisions. So it's very, very disappointing to see where our government goes sometimes. And the funny thing is people will keep voting for this stuff.
Oh, yeah, because they want stuff. And we talked about this earlier, the dirty secret of freedom is you have to impose freedom. Because if you leave it to a democracy, people will vote themselves slavery. They'll vote themselves debt. They will vote themselves other people's stuff. They'll become a lynch mob as opposed to a trial with evidence. They will do horrible things. Because of the nature of human beings is selfish, okay? But doesn't work. That's why you have. Oh yeah, but we're always there. But the difference is the law, the republic, the idea that we have due process, that we have an electoral college as opposed to an open democracy, national popular vote. The fact that we have these safeguards to create a republic that protect the rights of the individual. You know, because the majority will never protect the rights of the individual. So if you're going to have, because freedom is really based on the individual, right? And it's all about protection of the individual, about rights of the accused of the individual, the accumulation of property of the individual, and all these things are based on the individual. And the only way to protect the individual against society and the masses is by having a republic, is by having laws that protect the individual, by having a constitution, of having defined rights and a bill of rights. That's how you protect the individual. But that is really freedom is being imposed upon people that they wouldn't necessarily vote for. And that's the crazy part about it. So in order for us to be free, we actually may have to make everybody else free by imposing these things. And so the idea that people think they're free to vote themselves other people's stuff is the greatest danger we face in terms of economics. Yet that's what's going on out there. You look at these illegal aliens that block the Golden Gate Bridge. They want our stuff. And they feel entitled to it, even though they have no right to be
here. Well, I don't know if you've ever been to El Paso, you know, and I mean, not trying to be ugly or anything, but I mean, if you've ever lived there, stopped there, whatever, let me just tell you, the folks that are there don't believe that's the United States of America. So, you know, it's you end up you know, dealing with some problems, you know, if you're not from that ethnic background. You know, I'm not saying all the time, I'm not saying it's rampant, you know what I mean? But, you know, if you're there for a month, I promise you, you'll deal with it at least once, you know, so.
But here's the thing too, though, and I make this distinction all the time, and I'll ask Josie about this too. There are, you know, we've had, you know, I don't even like the term Latino or Hispanic, but just for the sake of it, we have Spanish origin, language people, in this country for generations. You know, most of, I think the largest, will you tell me, isn't the largest group in the military Hispanic? Folks, if I remember, I mean, or a huge percentage.
I don't know the demographic. I'd have to look it up.
Okay, but that's what I've heard. There's a huge percentage of Hispanics, or you know, like I say, just I'm using that term for convenience. All right, but in the military, and these are folks that are generational, that have been here, that have extended families and generations worth of people in this country who are loyal Americans. To distinguish that from the illegal alien, you know, foreign nationals that are coming here, that also, you know, would fall under that Hispanic label. Okay, so these are two completely different groups of people, and yet the lumping together doesn't make any sense at all. But this lie, and here's the question, Josie. I'm sorry, I will get to you. But here's the big lie. If you took the $3.5 trillion, which is really a $5 trillion stimulus, and you just don't have that, you know, wouldn't that cure the debt ceiling problem right there? The debt ceiling is really about borrowing. So in other words, they make an expenditure, they make an appropriation, all right? Then they have to authorize the money to pay for it. Otherwise, it's not going to go anywhere, you know? And they have to raise the debt ceiling to make the authorization.
How do you finance more debt? You know, I mean, how do you finance more spending? I mean, you do it all through that. I mean, you've got, you know, the girl Ocasio-Cortez going on the news laughing because Manchin, you know, decided to say, hey, I don't agree with the spending bill. And what her comment was, $1.5 trillion. She laughed. She's like, what is that going to last, a year? And then her next comment is, well, at least if we got the $3.5 billion, that's $350 billion a year. Well, hold up a second. By your just talking there, if he had $1.5 billion, you're talking about like 4 years there, you know, like where's your math at? You know, it's just like 4 years is quite, I mean, that gets you to another presidential term, that gets you to through two more terms of Congress. You know what I mean? Like, are you freaking kidding me? Like the level of stupidity that comes out of that woman's mouth sometimes is just like, and do you know that she won by like a landslide vote, like 73%? It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's like, that right there, like, should let you know that you don't want a person like that, like, dealing with our country's finances. Like, that's kind of sickening.
She's popular. She's popular because she wants to give away free stuff. She wants to send money to people. Yeah. People want free stuff. See, 100 years ago, people...
The funny thing is Nancy Pelosi would probably put her on the finance committee.
Of course.
But
the Depression, people didn't accept welfare checks. They had to actually work. That's what the CCC and the WPA were about. 100 years ago, people would not have accepted free money for not working because it would have been unthinkable to them. That's our national character. But here's the question, though. If they don't spend, if they don't authorize this $5 trillion, would that keep the borrowing under the debt limit where they don't have to raise it? In other words, by not authorizing something, would that be enough of a non-debt accumulator to not have to raise the debt ceiling? Or would they actually have to cut down or cut something
out? I mean, we'll be at $50 trillion before you can blink an eye. I mean, it's kind of a sad place to be. And I mean, I think what they're thinking is, you know, they want to abolish the debt ceiling, you know, and the good thing, I don't want to say this is a good thing, but it is a good thing. We're not printing bills in higher denominations yet. If we start printing bills in higher denominations, that's a huge nasty warning sign. That's basically saying that inflation has gotten out of control and we can't keep up with it. So the only thing we can do is print money that's worth more, right? Because the cost of goods and services has gone up so fast.
It's not worth more. It's actually worth less.
Well, right. I'm saying that backwards. But Zimbabwe, you know, huge example of that, where they had bills that were printed like $1 trillion bills. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And it was worth like less than a dollar.
Yeah.
I mean, it had like ones and zeros like all the way across the top of it, like Google and stuff. It's kind of funny. You know, but that's an example of like, you know, ultra high inflation or hyperinflation. You know, and I'm not saying that's going to happen in the country. What I think they're thinking is the fact that we're, you know, the economic superpower, China being right behind us, you know, nipping at our coattails. You know, we can continue to do this because debt doesn't matter because we have such a booming economy. It'll kind of support itself. It'll work itself out. I disagree that there should be a cap on this, you know, and that's what they try to do with the debt ceiling. They say, okay, hey, when we get to this point, we need to renegotiate. And, you know, it's both sides of the fence. I mean, the Republicans will want to spend and they'll be like, okay, Democrats, we need to raise the debt ceiling. And they're like, no. You know, and normally the Democrats will come in and cannibalize the military. You know, I mean, our defense budget is like, what is it, $685 billion a year?
It's almost $800 billion. Almost, yeah, it's up there.
Yeah, maybe that's an old number that I have, but it's like, you know, by far it's like double what any other nation does. You know, obviously we have the most technologically advanced. You know, they need to pick a number and say, okay, hey, this is what we're going to spend on our military. If by hindsight, you know, we spend like I think double that number on social systems.
Oh yeah,
you know, so
we
social
spend
systems,
more
I think, giving free money away.
Yeah, we spend more on the national debt, the interest on the national debt than we do on the military. That's how bad this has gotten.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the scary part. I just want to say one thing, though, and this, I'll try to make this as clear and concise as possible, that if we simply do not spend any more money, you know, you do not authorize anything else, we just maintain current spending and have no more spending authorizations this year, that should fall under the debt ceiling because the current spending is under the debt ceiling. It's the new bills they want to bring in that are going to exceed the debt ceiling, okay, and the borrowing. So it's the additional borrowing from the bills they haven't passed yet. Those are the obligations they're talking about. But if you keep the current obligations, because otherwise we'd already have exceeded the debt ceiling. So all they have to do is keep the current obligations. So what they're doing, they're not talking about maintaining our obligations. They're talking about new obligations. They want the ability to make new obligations, to authorize new spending, and then have new debt to pay for their new spending. But if they simply hold spending where it is right now, there's no need to touch the debt ceiling, and the government will not shut down. Does everybody understand that?
I bet you have pay raises in that. I haven't read all the way through the bill, but I bet you have pay raises in that bill.
I think there's a lot of things in that bill. There's red flag laws that Matt Gaetz never should have voted for. Here's something else. There's like $35 million for Afghan resettlement. So all those illegal Afghans that shouldn't be here, the 100,000, plus all their goats and their relatives that are going to be brought in next, you know, they've already spent money on paying for people that shouldn't be here. I mean, the insanity just never stops. Yeah. Josie, welcome to the conversation.
We're paying to bring terrorists to our country. But anyway, I wanted to say, since you're talking about money, I was listening last night to a report that a lot of the major companies will keep like $50 each paycheck if you are not vaccinated. So I don't know if that's legal for them to do and where will
that
money
that.
Go.
Yeah.
Well, last night they were talking about it in a
do you know which source?
That I was watching.
Who are you listening to, if you don't mind me asking? Who are you listening to, if you don't mind me asking?
The American, what's the name of that station? Trump station?
Oh, Frank Speech? See,
no,
see, there's a lot of stuff out there,
Hold
you know, as much as I, you know, love Mike Lindell and stuff, you got to be careful because there's a lot of misinformation. Like, you know, we've talked about this before, the military tribunals that were going to take over. That was never going to happen. Yeah. Derek, have you heard anything about that? Companies withholding money from patients? That's not even legal.
No, no. And I've heard something recently that there is a giant class action lawsuit against one of the airlines. I want to say it was American Airlines that said.
I think it's United.
You know, it might be United.
I think it's United.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But basically what they were doing is saying if you're not vaccinated, you're suspended for these unreasonable times. You know, and I think that's what they're using as a shoe-in. But like they were having like legal analysts and they had some other people, on Fox that were basically saying, you know, these guys are opening themselves up to a ton of lawsuits because what they're doing is unethical. Mm-hmm. And what they're going to do is lean against, equal opportunity employment kind of things. And they're basically going to be sued and they're probably going to win. You know, so they're trying to make an example of people and they will be made an example of is what's going to happen. So, but the problem is these things are going to knuckle drag long enough that it's going to become irrelevant.
Well, and they don't care about the lawsuits. It's like they know these policies are illegal. They know the open border is illegal. We've got laws against illegal aliens in this country. They're violating them. You know, we've got laws against people aiding and abetting, you know, illegal aliens, and like Catholic Charities is acting illegally, and yet we're all funding it through tax dollars. They don't care. These vaccine mandates are illegal under several reasons, you know, if nothing else, but illegal search and seizure of your person under the Fourth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's tons of reasons, but they don't care that it's illegal. They're doing it anyway because they know the court cases
will
take long enough that the impact will be there.
Yep.
They'll get their goal. And you see, with most court cases, that a judge would put an injunction on them and then decide the court case. That's what the liberal judges do. They put an injunction on Trump policies, you know, saying you can't do this until it's okay with the court. Whereas the Republicans, because they're gutless geldings, they wait until the process goes all the way through and the court case is decided before doing anything about it. Then you have conservative judges who will stop this right now and then decide if it's legal. Because the harm that's being done with a vaccine mandate, I mean, how many people are going to die because of this? And you talk about the airlines. British Airways, I remember an article a couple of months ago, they lost 4 pilots in a week who were vaccinated. They died. All right. So what's the danger? Do you want to fly with a vaccine-injured pilot? I don't. I don't want spike proteins in their blood. I don't know what happens to them. Because airliners are pressurized to 8,000 feet. That's not sea level, folks. You've got to reduce oxygen. Hold on just a second, Chelsea. You've got a reduced oxygen capacity. You know, they talk about 92% of your O2 from what you should have puts you in the hospital. Well, at 8,000 feet, I forgot what the partial pressure is, but there's reduced oxygen in your bloodstream because the pressure to get air into your lungs is less at 8,000 feet than it is at sea level. So you're talking about people with blood clots, reduced oxygen capacity, flying at an 8,000-foot pressure altitude. I'm not crazy about that.
Probably at more risk. Yeah.
Yeah, the higher you fly, this is why it's so dangerous for pilots to get vaccine injured because airplanes are not pressurized to sea level like most people think. It's not fresh air at sea level.
Right.
Yes.
8,000 feet.
Yeah.
It's 3,000 feet higher than Denver, Colorado. Chelsea, back to you, and then we'll go to Derek.
Some of the pilots are having seizures as they get into a certain altitude. And a lot of them are dying from a heart attack or stroke.
Yeah.
A lot of the military pilots are walking out. There was a group of pilots, because I was reading this morning, there was a group of pilots that they were flying, and then on radio they say, hey, as soon as you land, you need to head to be vaccinated. And they're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of pilots are walking out of military. I'm talking about military right now. They're resigning. It's very sad how many of them, lieutenants, and so many. And 250 Postal Service just resigned also. I don't know. I would say don't resign. Just let them fire you. But see, people are desperate because they don't want to get the job. You know, they just want to walk out. And it is sad. But when Donald Trump returns, I believe, and we should put every military back in their position, and I believe that's what's going to happen.
Well, this is something I'm thinking too. You're absolutely right. I don't want to get Derek's opinion on this too. We only have him for a couple more minutes here. But as these people are walking out, that's going to create a huge, you know, employment gap. Those folks aren't going to be there. My personal opinion is they're going to change after a while when enough people, the critical mass is reached, that we have these people removed, you know, from their jobs forcibly because they don't want to take the vaccine spike protein infusion, that they're going to have to turn this around at some point and reverse that because they need the people working. You know, do you see how's that going to affect the jobs report? Are they going to account for the fact that so many people are being forced out? Maybe 20-30% of these companies, the airlines, are just not going to be there because they don't want to get they don't want to have their life endangered by these alleged vaccines. Derek?
Well, they're on the hook for unemployment. You know, so okay. I mean that's going to hurt them. They're on the hook for some people that have tenure that have severance packages. They're on the hook for not being able to replace these people that you know, have, you know, necessary training and skills, you know, that you know, training workforce and things. So, I mean, you know, by their doing this, they're taking a lot on the chin. Will the jobs report reflect this? I will say that it probably will. You know, to what extent? I mean, I think they're saying that it's about I think CNN is putting on some bad numbers, and I think Fox is also putting on bad numbers because, you know, I've got a close personal friend that works for one of the hospitals here, and they're saying that the number of people refusing is about 10% refusing the vaccine. And then what the news is putting on is they're saying that it's less than 1%. So that's a huge spread. You know, so there's going to be a pretty huge impact to that. Not only that, but all that money for unemployment that they extended and stuff, that all dried up last month. So what you're going to see is a big boom in the workforce coming because now everybody's going to want to go back to work because all that free money's gone. You know,
and
so
the minimum wage is up in
Florida. You're going to see some impact.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see some market volatility, probably not this month. You know, this stuff that we're having is, I think, a little bit of an overreaction to what's going on with our government, but in the markets, you know, overall for the past month is down like 4%. You know, so I
the market's taking a huge hit. There's already market volatility. The market's taking a huge hit this week. There's already market volatility.
I don't consider anything under 5% anything bad. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's normal volatility. You're going to see that. Like when you start getting over 10%, then I have concerns. You know, so really even over 5%, I mean, not all sectors typically are hit, so you may not see even much in your performance. But what I would be concerned about is the next couple months, you know, with evictions, foreclosures, all while we're in this transition to this job market, you know. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be good. So
yeah. But that makes sense. And so if you're laid off because you refuse the vaccine, or fired, that does allow you to get unemployment, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no question.
Okay. Just make sure. But if you quit, you don't get unemployment? Hold on, I'm just going to ask one question. So if you quit a job, you don't get unemployment because you left a perfectly
That's
good
correct.
Job, even if you don't like it. Okay,
yep.
I got it. All right. Josie, one more question, then we're going to get to Jim. We're going to talk guns.
Exactly. That's the sad part, that a lot of this military are resigning. I said, let them fire you. And they're just desperate. They just want to walk out because they don't want that. But, Derek, I was going to ask you, do you know when is this free money stopping? Do you know anything about it?
October 1st, today.
That's today.
You know, this is it.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
This is it for them. Yeah.
This is Employment Day.
I mean, we're
National Employment Day.
This is it. Now, the moratorium on the mortgages ended last month, but, you know, evictions, it depends on what state you live in. So some are 30,
yeah.
some are 60, and some are 90 days. You know, Florida's 60 days, you know, so, you know, some of the, you know, northern states are like 90 days. So you're going to start seeing that fallout here in the next couple months.
Yeah. All right. Interesting.
Talk to you
Thanks,
guys
Josie.
Later.
All right.
God bless.
And Derek, obviously I wish we had more time today, but I want to get to Jim. And of course, you're welcome as always to stay on the line. But if you have to go, then I certainly understand that too. But let's get this going. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dykes with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio. Everybody laughed.
Josie left.
I seem to have that effect on people.
Yeah, it's your fault, Jim. We just lost two. We gained one. Okay, fine. I guess we're not quite breaking even. That's okay. Yeah, this has been as I was talking to Derek real briefly, this is our first week of 3 hours at the new time slot. So we get a lot of chance. Gina and I get a great chance in the first hour because not a lot is scheduled right now to go into more detailed things. Now, we have one report. We have Jane Addams does the Medical Freedom Report, and she's deeply involved with the whole health problem of health of vaccine mandates and everything else. So we're starting to get extra reports in. So we're expanding our week, but we have been able to cover some things. I'm already a wreck. This is one of those incredible mornings here. Gun World. What is the Biden Marxist regime doing to us this week? Or if you want to do a gun of the week or something else, what's happening?
All right. So I figured I would start this week with some cases that the Supreme Court will be considering this session. So the Supreme Court held their first conference to consider cases for the new term this week. And there's a handful of Second Amendment cases that are being considered. So I thought I'd just go quickly over those really quickly so folks keep an eye out. And then I will, of course, let you know if any of them are accepted or denied as we go through the process. So the first one is Russell versus New Jersey. This case is very similar to the case that the Supreme Court is considering already this session and will be arguing this session for New York. New York has a May issue scheme for granting concealed carry licenses, and they require you to show a justifiable need, and wanting to defend yourself is not what they consider a justifiable need.
Stop right there. Hold the presses. Okay. This is the most irrational hypocrisy. Not that hypocrisy is rational anyway, but think about that. The right to keep and bear arms for the purposes of self-defense cannot be used for the purposes of self-defense without permission. Have I got that about right?
You've got it just about right. So this case is a very similar case being brought up from New Jersey, which has a very similar scheme for their concealed carry permits. My guess is that the Supreme Court will probably do nothing with this case until they decide the New York case, and then they will likely send this back down to the appellate court that it came from and tell them to decide this case in accordance with their decision in the New York case. That's my guess on what will happen on this one.
Okay.
Because they are so similar.
Go ahead.
They're just so similar. Yeah.
Huh. These two states, New Jersey and New York, which are unfortunately supplying, refugees to Florida. And I wish, if you want to come to Florida, folks, from the East Coast, just leave New Jersey and New York behind, please. We don't want that kind of crap here. But that's happening. But so these two states are so, and this is off topic for your expertise, but what is it about New England and New York and Pennsylvania, states that and Virginia, that were the founding of this nation? Massachusetts, that are the most gun-grabbing, authoritarian, socialist, lost their way? Is it the fact that they were just earlier states and the Marxists had a chance to take over more? Where did the mindset go? Where was the mindset that produced people that, as I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, I used to watch the Battery enactments when they did the April 19th, the shot heard around the world, and they had the British marched up, and they actually had British marching up, in uniform. And Paul Revere rode through, and we rang the bell, the old belfry, at 4 a.m. We did all the things that were done on April 19th. And, of course, the Minutemen only held off the British. They didn't win because it was like 20 Minutemen and about, 600 British regulars. And that's where well-regulated comes from, folks, because they were called regulars, not soldiers or infantry. Anyway, so the regulars were there, and off they marched to the Concord Bridge, and that's where they really started to get harassed all the way back to Boston. But the same people, the descendants of the people that fought for our freedom against impossible odds at on the Lexington Battle Green, are the very people that are doing exactly what the British tried to do, which is take all the guns. What the hell happened? Why there, of all places? I understand a new state, but why did it happen the place that was our most freest, most empowered, most, you know, American first, the original American firsters, of the founders? What the hell happened to that part of the country?
I can offer an opinion that is just based upon observation and not any empirical data.
Well, that's fine. That's what I'm asking for, actually. Yeah.
Okay. My opinion is that the progressives and leftists who are primarily anti-gun have been very effective at taking over the education system, particularly colleges and universities.
Okay.
And they have been most effective at the colleges and universities on the West Coast and in New England. So you have a group of people who are being indoctrinated by leftists to be anti-gun, who are coming out of these New England, California, Washington, Oregon colleges and universities, and are going out and voting in people who then follow that dogma that they're being taught.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A couple of things come to mind. I remember, I suppose I can mention his name. He's probably very old if he's still with us at all. Mr. Capezza was a driver instructor. We took driver's ed. This is back in the 70s when I was in high school. Just to give you a little perspective. So he'd be really old right now if he is still with us. But he was the first person that actually openly talked to me about guns, because he was a gun owner, and he said, "I don't want them coming for my guns." And of course, I was, you know, the product of an ultra socialist feminist, you know, radically wacko couple of parents with a bunch of other problems I'm not going to go into now. But the point was that I had my own indoctrination, and the indoctrination at that point was against guns. So of course, I was fascinated with guns. I thought, what's the big deal? What's the big mystery here? But I thought, well, they're bad. Guns are bad. I mean, they're okay in Westerns, and they're okay when you're fighting a war, but regular people shouldn't own them. He says, why not? You know, he says, I have guns. Not coming for my guns. I said, why do you own a gun? This is because I'm an American. It's my right. And then he went into the history and all that kind of stuff. And he kind of started me on my, you know, I'm eternally grateful because he started me on this journey. So one person counteracted all that influence in both the education, the media, and my own parents, who were trying to convince me that, you know, that this is the way it should be. And yet one person stands up and says something that made perfect sense to me. And it's like, okay, so here I am listening to that one person, and the indoctrination, it didn't work. Now, that's just my case, but it works for so many. But it's very interesting that even in Massachusetts, there's still that independent spirit. And I'm sure you serve with people from Massachusetts. You know, the people that came in the military that you served with, or any of the New York, Connecticut, you know, all those New England states, did you find them to be characteristic of that same philosophy that only the military should have guns, or are they much more defending of the right for everybody? I'm just curious.
For me, it was kind of a mixed bag. Now, understand, I'm a dinosaur, so. This was quite a while ago, so
okay. Are you like Jurassic and I'm Cretaceous, or what? I mean, which one of us is the more senior dinosaur here? It's probably me.
Yeah, but it was a mixed bag that I saw, and I think that the people who I served with, who were from most of the southern states and the Midwest and Texas and the Southwest, tended to be much less progressive. In fact, it was very, very seldom that I would run into someone who was progressive from any of those states that went into the military.
Yeah. Yeah. That would seem to be counterintuitive to do that, because if you don't believe in the right to keep and bear arms, why would you join a military that swears an oath to fight for the right to keep and bear arms? It seems counter to what you would do. So the people who do go in do believe in that right, even if they're in a place that doesn't.
Yeah, I will tell you, though, there are some people who go in because they are either coming from a life where they were on the fringes of gangs, or they are considering doing that, and they think it's a good way to go get training in using firearms.
Oh, that's scary. That's a whole report unto itself, Jim. If you want to put something together on that, and if you get some information, stats, you know, or just personal observations or things, that is very interesting. One would think those people would be weeded out, but I'm guessing that doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, it does when the military can find out about it. The ones who usually get through are ones who have done a good job concealing their affiliation and have not been arrested. So they don't show up in a system anywhere.
Interesting. And now the military, I mean, we're off topic, but, you know, that's how we do things, right? It's so much fun. Whatever you think you're going to talk about, Jim, it's just not going to happen.
Sorry. And I'm okay with that.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's okay. The whole idea, Tucker Carlson made an interesting point last week that the military is going after what they consider white supremacists, or, you know, and this whole vaccine mandate is a way to find out who are the leaders, who are the independents, who are the thinkers, who are the nonconformists, who are people who are serving and will comply with lawful orders, but they want the people that will comply with unlawful orders. They want the sheep. They want the vax. They want, the compliant peasant military, as opposed to thinking people that can become thinking officers and actually thinking generals, unlike the people who were before Congress this week. You've been out of it for a bit, but were you there when they had the anthrax vaccine mandate?
Yes. And that's
so
the reason that I was almost certain that as soon as this vaccine got FDA approval, they would require it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right
because
on that.
Because the only reason they didn't before was because it didn't have approval, and they ran into such a huge issue with the anthrax vaccine when they were giving it to service members because it did not have FDA approval. So,
well, and here's the irony, though, that the vaccines that are out there, which are really our spike protein infusion shots, the ones that they're giving out are not approved. Those are still under the emergency use authorization. They haven't made the approved ones. And they won't be made for several years because they have so much of the emergency use authorization supply that there's going to be no need to make new vaccines till at least 2023. So the idea that these are approved, yeah, they've approved them, but they haven't made them. They're still using the old ones. And I don't think a lot of people know that, certainly not in the military. Otherwise, they'd be screaming and yelling more.
Well, interestingly, there has been a case filed by some service members in federal court about the vaccine mandate. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
I don't hold out a lot of hope that it will be successful, but it's interesting. Their challenge, instead of strictly being against having to get the vaccine, their challenge is based on the fact that they have already had the virus, and so there's no need for them to get the vaccine.
Well, the vaccine doesn't stop the virus anyway. I mean, it's not intended to. It's just designed to lower your symptoms, allegedly. But perception, you know, if we talk about military readiness, if you want to really destroy military readiness, make sure everybody gets this thing. I mean, Pianchi to you, and who knows, we might even get to another case. That's good. It is one of those days. Pianchi, you're on with Jim Dykes in the Second Amendment Report. What's up, sir?
Yeah, I'm so expectant of Jim Dykes' report. It kind of reminds me of the days when we went to see the Beatles.
How is that?
But
wait a minute.
Yeah,
no,
everybody was excited. It's excitement.
Oh,
we know he's going to have something informative to say.
There you go, Jim. There's your audience report for today. That's pretty good.
I'll take that any day of the week. Thank you, Pianchi.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what's needed? We need to have more people wearing their guns where they can be seen.
Yeah. Well,
and
this is.
I think, yeah, then the public would get used to it.
Yeah. I've talked about this before, but we need to, in fact, I don't think I've talked about it with you, Jim, but that's the whole point of Florida Carry. Florida Carry is dedicated to open carry. The normalization of the sight of firearms on non-government, non-law enforcement people is absolutely critical to preserving the Second Amendment, because the more people that are seen carrying, the better for all of us in terms of it being a normal thing. And when I first got to, when I crossed the nation, when I was moving here, I went from California to Arizona, and Arizona is an open carry state. I saw three guys walk into breakfast. This is where I knew I was back in America. It was great. I'd left California. I got up, went to my local equivalent of the Waffle House out there. Three guys walked in openly carrying 45s cocked and locked. I said, oh, God, I'm back in America. Isn't this wonderful? That was my reaction. That's not the reaction that, you know, Susie Cream Cheese Liberal would give in Massachusetts. But, you know, that's the difference. But let's talk about that, Jim. Normalization and what's going on with that with Florida Carry. But the idea of normalizing the sight of firearms.
Yeah, so we have been doing that since the inception of Florida Carry. Fortunately for us, there are some exceptions to the law which prohibits the open carry of firearms in Florida. And one of those exceptions is that you may open or concealed carry with or without a permit if you are engaged in hunting, fishing, or camping, or going to or from any of those activities. So Florida Carry, for over 10 years now throughout the state, sponsors open carry fishing events where we will go to either a public pier or a shoreline, and we'll have a group of us show up and we will open carry and fish for the day, just so that people can see us, get used to seeing people with firearms, to see that everything is very, very safe and that firearms don't magically jump out of holsters and start killing people. That it's actually the person that decides whether you're safe or not, and not the piece of equipment or the tool that they're carrying.
Yeah. And here's the weird part, that in terms of law compliance, you know, nothing against law enforcement, but your average concealed carry holder is a far more law-abiding citizen than the average citizen, and is even more law-abiding than a decent percentage of the police officers, which is kind of fascinating. I remember reading a study on that. But the idea of normalizing the sight of firearms, which we tried that in California before they made open carry unload. They had open carry unloaded. It was kind of a weird thing. So you could have loaded magazines on one side, but you have an empty gun on the other side of your you know, belt holsters there, which is kind of fascinating. So we used to go to, we went to Starbucks, we went to this place, this pizza restaurant in Walnut Creek. We went, and of course we called the owners ahead of time and said, look, let me tell the story real quick. So we went there, this one place, this pizza place, and it was the safest restaurant in all of California that particular day. There were about 40 of us in there openly carrying. And, of course, the patrons didn't know that this was going on. And so we'd calmly walk up to them and say, can we sit down and join you for a minute? We want to explain, you know, what we're doing. And these are families, kids, the whole bit. And they're like, okay. And we say, yes, we're openly carrying. We're showing that, you know, that the sight of firearms on regular citizens is a good thing. We're trying to normalize the sight of it and get the state to work, you know, more for open carry. And of course the vast majority, in fact, I didn't remember anybody objecting. I'm sure somebody did probably, but the fact is that just people, when they're introduced to this, when they see it for the first time, when they didn't know what's going to happen, you know, you got 40, 50 people in a restaurant all carrying firearms, you know, with openly carrying and open magazine, you know, with magazines on the other side. And those magazines can be loaded, and they were, you know, and here we are in this restaurant, and we had a great time. And so it's the perception is what people don't know. They're afraid of things that they don't know. And so they don't know what will happen if everybody starts carrying guns. But when everybody does start carrying guns and nothing happens, it's like, oh, well, that's not so bad. You know, Bianchi, go ahead, and then we'll get back to Jim.
Well, yeah, and there can be promotions. Like, rather than coupons, you come in with wearing your gun, you get 5% off your coffee, your pizza. Car dealerships can offer discounts on a new car if you come in wearing your gun, because they're going to do that anyway. So now you put a reason to it that can be very productive.
That is fabulous. So sales for carrying a gun. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I've actually seen that at a few restaurants and diners where they have a sign that will give you, say, 10% off if you come in and you're openly carrying a firearm.
You know what? We're going to start doing that here. Oh, we can't do it in Florida.
We can't do it in Florida. Although I will tell you one of the other things that, that a fairly large group of people in Florida have started doing. Because in Florida, a concealed firearm is a firearm that is concealed from the normal sight of an average person. So printing is not illegal in Florida. So printing is when you can see the outline of a firearm under your clothing. So if you can't actually see the firearm in Florida, you are not openly carrying. Yeah. So a group of online places are selling now what we refer to depending on the place you buy it from, is either a Freedom cover or a Glock stock.
I know what's coming. I'm sorry.
It is basically a piece of cloth that has elastic around it, almost like a shower cap would be for someone. And it goes over your outside the waistband holster and firearm. And a lot of them actually have the outline of a firearm drawn on the outside of this piece of material.
Well, I've seen one with a life-size Glock picture covering up an actual Glock. It's hysterical. But so everybody knows you have a gun. You've got a cover on the gun that's the shape of the gun, and you've got a picture of the gun on the covering of the gun. It cracks me up. It's hysterical. And that's perfectly legal in Florida.
Yes.
I might start to do that. That's just kind of fun. Because one thing is, as I was a new concealed carry person here in Florida, because I came from California where everything's illegal, right? And so I told the story before. I'm not going to do it again of my first attempts at, carrying in a bank. Here I am with a loaded gun in a bank going, well, this is interesting. And the next time I went to the bank, of course, the armored car guys were there with a cash route in front of me. And like, hey, guys, how you doing? And here I am with my Glock, Model 22 40 caliber. I thought, well, this is interesting too. But I mean, obviously I'm, a law-abiding citizen, but there's a psychology that goes with carrying a gun. And now to think that I might get myself a gun sock, openly displaying the fact that I have a gun with a picture of the gun that I have and to have that be perfectly legal, that just cracks me up. I have to think about it for a bit, but I think it's something that'd be worth doing because I want to protest. I would love to have an open carry Second Amendment barbecue that is a civil disobedient event with law enforcement knowing all about it without us all getting arrested. And we've talked about that before. You said we'd probably all get arrested, so I don't want to do it. But I'm trying to find a way to protest people clearly know what we're doing, but we're still complying with the law. Hopefully it'll change the law. Okay. All right.
All right. You ready for the next case? We probably have time to get through one more case.
We spent a while on the first one. Go ahead.
That's okay. And this is another good case that'll show how ridiculous some states are in their definition of the Second Amendment. And this is probably the case that I am most hopeful that the Supreme Court will take. Okay. It's Young v. Hawaii out of the Ninth Circuit. And it challenges Hawaii's ban on unlicensed open carry. This is important because it deals with the idea that you can carry a firearm for self-defense. So according to the opinion that was issued by the Ninth Circuit, neither the right to carry a concealed firearm or to openly carry a firearm is protected by the Second Amendment.
Yeah, they just made that up. Wish they didn't.
So my hope is that they will take the case. I am concerned that they will sit on this case until they decide the New York rifle and pistol case. Mm-hmm. And then depending on what opinion they issue in that case, they'll decide whether or not to take this one. So if the decision in New York rifle and pistol is very, very broad, then they may just remand this back to the Ninth Circuit and say, you have to decide this in accordance with our ruling in the New York rifle and pistol case. If it's very narrowly tailored to what New York has done, then they may accept this one. So this is one that I'm really interested to see.
Yeah. It's amazing they can take so long and just they literally make stuff up that the right to carry, does not include in the right to carry firearms. It's insane to me, but yet they do that and they're allowed to get away with it because you have to go through the process to prove that they were wrong in their initial interpretation, which is why I don't like interpretations. You just read the law, you're so much better off. But isn't there something in the Constitution? I'm looking for Article 5 here about a speedy trial. Isn't there something in that says that, of course that's not for these civil things, but
even in those cases the trial has occurred, so right. We're in the appellate process now, so
and that's not covered in the Constitution. Okay.
Yeah, the speedy trial has already occurred. You're now fighting against a decision that was rendered. But it's really interesting that no one on the Ninth Circuit appears to own a dictionary, because if they did, they would look up the word bear and know that obviously the right to carry a firearm has to be protected by the Second Amendment. The word is in the Second Amendment.
Yeah. Well, this is why I don't often say keep and bear. A lot of times I'll say own and carry, because I'll say the modern interpretation, because that's, you know, you have the right to own any firearm. You know, the idea that you can't own an assault weapon, you know, because that's not covered by the Second Amendment. Well, if you have the right to own firearms, then, you know, where there's no segregation of that, then of course you know, everything's included. You know, the right to carry, I say it because we talk about concealed carry, we don't talk about concealed bearing of firearms. Although it'd be interesting if we did, but as the language has changed, I've adapted, you know, keep and bear to own and carry, simply because it instructs people subconsciously that that's what we're talking about. And if you put that with the Second Amendment, this sort of, you know, the relationship is that own and carry is keep and bear, and that's what it means. Because keep and bear doesn't mean things to people. What do you mean keep? Well, that means, you know, just an own. Oh, okay. You know. Anyway, Jim, you want to say something?
Well, what about...
Oh, Pianki.
What about state constitutions like Missouri in 1875 has a Second Amendment clause in it, which is very, very, very good one. So what happens when you run up against that?
What's it say? Come on, don't leave us hanging. What's the clause say in the Missouri Constitution?
The clause is practically written like the Second Amendment is.
Right.
But the thing is, what happens when you run up against that state constitution? You know, it's a state constitution that permits cities and municipalities to exist, police departments to exist, and also the right for people to own and bear and have arms. So what happens then?
I think they're just openly ignored. I just think that the Second Amendment exists, and people, they say that they're old and count anymore. That was written for a different time. You know, the Second Amendment doesn't really mean what it says, which is what these latest cases are all about. The Second Amendment doesn't mean to cover all guns. It doesn't mean to cover carrying guns outside your home. It doesn't mean to cover, you know, whatever it is they say it doesn't cover, when in fact it actually does. They're just making stuff up to suit their case, and then you have to prove that they're wrong when they're so obviously wrong. That's the problem. Jim.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with the state constitution, you have a couple of issues that come into play. If you have a law that violates the state constitution, and that's your argument, is that this violates what our state constitution says, then the appropriate venue for that is within the state courts, and the final decision is handled by the state Supreme Court. In many states, like Hawaii, everyone knows that the Hawaiian state courts are never going to give a pro to a ruling. So the case gets filed in federal court, and the argument, instead of it being against the state constitution, is the argument that it violates the U.S. Constitution. And that gets us into the federal court and hopefully to a Supreme Court that now ostensibly should be a pro to a Supreme Court. And we'll see with the decision that comes out of the New York case.
Yeah. Yeah, I still worry about the Supreme Court, the federal one, simply because, you know, the three people that are there, you know, Barrett, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, frat boy, they all came from the Federalist Society. They all seem to stick together as a moderately conservative, you know, group slightly. And it looks like another group that was, you know, pawned off on the president by the deep staters, make them look like conservatives. But in reality, you know, they're not Sam Alito, and they're not Clarence Thomas. I got a question for you, Jim. I'm curious. This is completely off topic, but I went over a constitutional budget, and where I took the actual Article 1, Section 8. Pianki remembers this too, I'm sure. Went over Article 1, Section 8 and assigned government departments to the assigned government departments to the clauses of Article 1, Section 8, came out with about $1 trillion budget. Most of that's defense. The infrastructure, the highways, airways, waterways, and the necessary offices of government, Congress, President, Judiciary, you know, Patent Office, you know, things that they call for, weights and measures, that kind of stuff. It's about $1 trillion. And so that's about 25% of the budget. So 75% is unconstitutional. So my my claim that I want to do, it's more for education than anything else because I don't expect it to happen, but the idea itself I think is worthy of doing, that I want to sue in the Supreme Court that the federal budget is unconstitutional and have it overruled.
Ooh.
You're gonna do what, Greg?
My first thing would be, I hope you have a lot of money behind you, because it's going to take a lot of money just to get to the Supreme Court, because you can't file directly to the Supreme Court. So you're going to have to file in federal court and go through the appellate process, which is going to be very expensive, just to get to a point where you could file a cert petition to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's going to be a long process. I got Jonathan Mosley, our legal expert, is going to help me with that. But the biggest thing I want to do is the education, the idea that it is unconstitutional and that we are willing to at least, you know, try and get this challenge up there. But there's enough money, you know, in what the Heritage Foundation spends on their luncheons and their overpriced speakers to easily get this through the federal court system. You know, there's enough money in all these big foundations, you know, that have just millions upon millions of dollars. And they spend it on themselves and stupid things. They don't take up causes like this, you know. And do I expect it to be ruled? Do I expect the Supreme Court to rule, or if it give an opinion? I'm sorry, I shouldn't say rule. Give an opinion that the federal budget is unconstitutional? No. Is it unconstitutional? Yes. It's an open and shut case. It's clearly unconstitutional. But the idea of bringing this, but the idea of having people think that this is even a possibility, I think is such a valuable tool. It's like a lot of times cases, you know, that may never pass, but the value of bringing them, of creating the awareness that, huh, what do you mean the Constitution's what do you mean the budget's unconstitutional? I think there's a huge amount of things, you know, value in that. So I think it's been an interesting cause. But yeah, I expect it to get there and be taken up? No. Do I expect it to be national news one day? Yes. Where I stand on that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's usually a challenge to get any of those groups to take up a case that they know they have no chance of winning. So
yeah, but
it'll be interesting to find one.
How do we redefine their concept of winning? See, winning to me would be to have a national story, to have a big education push of people going, hey, guess what this wacko is doing over at Action Radio? He wants to sue that the federal budget is unconstitutional, ha, 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 ha. You know, and then people are like, he's going to do what? Why would he do that? You know, and just the people, those out there that would question it, that would raise that awareness, that would sort of go, huh, you never thought of that. You know, that's really the purpose. It's like when we had a live chat. Let me check live chat here because I haven't done that for a while. We have live chat. When Bumperjack, who's our perennial live chat person, asked me, you know, have you ever been successful with a bill? Well, I've been successful with all of them because nobody's ever done what we're doing here. But have they passed yet? No, but we're working on it. Barbara Jackson, so I'll take those up later. I don't know if Chappie can call in simply because he has a match today. He was going to try and call in from the match, so I'm not surprised that he hasn't been able to call in. Jim, do you have to go, or do you have a few minutes?
Actually have to jump off right now. So
that's fine. Okay, sounds good. All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. As always. Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say thank you. As always, it's great to be on, and you guys can find me at www.floridacarry.org or email me at jim@floridacarry.org.
Okay. Do you know where I can get one of those gun socks with a Glock picture on it?
I do. I'll send you a link.
Okay. Put it on the Action Radio gun page.
Okay.
And I'll do it.
I will
now,
do so.
Now, here's the thing. Now, just before you go, would Florida Carry be interested in sponsoring a gun sock barbecue?
Probably. I mean, we have a bunch of people who wear them often, and we actually sell them through the Florida Carry store. So
let's talk. Talk to them. Yeah. Talk to me. We'll talk next week. I'll put it on the agenda. Gunstock
right,
Barbecue. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Ray.
All right. You're welcome. All right. I'm going to read live chat in a little bit here. So I'm going to play you a couple things first. I love Fridays, you know, between Derek, Jim, and now Chappie, the ability to talk about, you know, all this really cool stuff is just wonderful. All right, let me play a couple things here and move my screen a little bit. And then, Gene, if you want to get back in the conversation, feel free. But here we go. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Yeah, I got caught reading, so let me play something else here. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. To call any show on the Action Radio Network from anywhere in the United States, the number is 215-383-3832. To call any show from outside the United States using Skype, call 011, then 1-215-383-3832. We have many groups within Action Radio which will become laboratories for citizen legislation and serve as a place you can go for more specialized information. From the main Facebook page, Action Radio with Greg Penglis, at facebook.com/radiolegislature, you can check out our Action Radio news group, our vaccine project, the Family Law Project, the art project, the writer's page, the video page, our new student advocacy group, and many more groups that are coming soon. Remember, at Action Radio, we don't report the news, we are the news. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. See all the fun we have here? All these things I've been able to make. I'm going to make more of them, too. So we definitely run an ADHD. This is, I think, one of my favorite lines there. You know, it's like I put all the cliches of my show in one place. The only thing I'm going to do, I have to add a new one here. You know, Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. That's our new cause here. So that's us, Gene. We're dedicated to fixing everything. We'll see how far we get. Gene's got some good reactions here to Bumper Jack. And Gene, feel free to jump in here anytime. We're talking about, Gene says, from the election, if one did not legally win, the electoral votes can be removed. And, of course, that's true, because you can't let thieves get away with stealing, you know, they can't profit. And that's a law in our society, that nobody can profit from a crime. That's why criminals can't write a book and receive, you know, $1 million in royalties, you know, after killing somebody. You can't profit off your crime. In the same way, politicians can't profit off their crimes. They can't maintain an office that they got by fraud. I mean, that's just basic logic. You can't keep the money from robbing a bank, you know, even though you're convicted of it. You can't go out and, you know, if you stash the money, you know, before you're thrown in jail, you can't go out after jail and pick up the money again because you stole it, all right? And that's how this works. And the same thing works with the presidency. If you steal the White House, you obviously can't keep it because you got there illegally. So the idea that and the Constitution clearly says, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, I'm going to memorize that the states basically call the shots. You know, and the states give the electors, the states can take away, the states appoint the electors, is more accurate. The states can take back their electors. There's no time limit on it. It's perfectly constitutional. And then when the electors fall below, if they decertify, the electors fall below 270 for Thief in Chief Biden, he's done. Then Congress has to then determine the president by the vote of the states. Each state delegation gets a vote. So if you have a predominantly Republican state delegation, as in Florida, it's going to vote for Trump. Unfortunately, parties are there. So I'm not crazy about parties, but That's how it works. So Bumper Jack says, you've got misinformation. Claire yesterday was absolutely correct. Once the votes are certified, there's no way to change that. No, that's not true. And that's what we just went over. Regarding the lawsuits for the vaccinations, they've all been thrown out so far. Well, they may have been, but not for good reason. They've been thrown out because they don't want to take them. They've been thrown out because they don't want to look at the evidence. It's just like the election cases. They've thrown those out too. Doesn't mean they aren't valid cases. It means the judges are corrupt. Next one. People are not going to get unemployment for refusing to comply with employer rules. Yes, they are. We just went over that with Derek. They are going to get unemployment because unless you quit, you know, if you're laid off or fired, you get unemployment. That's so you can get another job. It says employers can mandate what they want. No, they can't. You know, you can't. You know, as much as employers can say, you know, like free speech, can you stand on a desk, you know, in a retail establishment and yell at the top of your lungs your political views? No, but you still have the option to exercise your free speech rights away from work. When it comes to the rights over your own body, if an employer mandates that you get something that you know is going to hurt you, they can't do that. That's an unreasonable seizure. And an employer cannot act like a government. That would be an employer acting like a government mandating that you have to do this. They can't do that. You don't give up your constitutional rights, you know, when you go to work. It doesn't work that way. Constitutional rights are always enforced, just as they were enforced when you have a pandemic, a public health emergency. You still have all your constitutional rights, which makes all the lockdowns and mask mandates illegal and unconstitutional. Gene, I got one more article here I want to get to. I just want to check with you and see if there's anything you'd like to get into here as well.
No, I'm good. You can do your article.
Okay, good. And again, if you find any of your research stuff turns up something, you know, from those groups, todos, para todos, dolidos, whatever it was, then that should be interesting. This article is a little bit older. It's by J.B. Shirk from September 2nd, 2021. So earlier, last month. We're in October already. This is so cool. Things happen for me in October. October and April are my active months. Crazy things happen both months. Don't ask me why, they just do. All right, so the article says, allow me to suggest 3 cheat codes for separating truth from propaganda in the age of mass media manipulation. 1, whatever is censored is true. 2, refusal to audit elections is proof that vote totals are unverifiable and fraudulent. 3, any president who inexplicably disappears for days at a time and admits that he is, quote, not allowed to answer questions from the press is not actually president. If you put 1, 2, and 3 together, you get an incompetent and schizophrenic government incapable of protecting its armed forces overseas, securing its borders at home, preventing runaway inflation from destroying the economy, or acting in the best interest of the American people. What you get is a dazed and addled puppet pretending to be commander-in-chief while unelected and unaccountable shadow figures call the shots. What you get is the Praetorian press that has no problem lying about the fake president's obvious dementia by framing his mental handicaps as nothing more than a, quote, childhood stutter. You get American service members murdered and maimed at the tail end of a 20-year war because the stooges in charge put optics and political correctness ahead of troop safety. You get a world devoid of American leadership because an evil cabal of media monopolists, corrupt election officials, and deep state politicos conspire to rid Washington of President Trump and put one of the dumbest and most venal members of the D.C. club into the Oval Office to do its bidding. What you get is a ruling class with blood on its hands. Let me continue. Is there anybody who... Yeah, and like I said, the reason I say breaks like that is for you to hop in if you want to. If not, that's perfectly understandable. We shall continue. Like I said, I'll take a break each paragraph. Like I said, I'll give you a chance to jump in here. Is there anybody who doesn't understand at this point that the news media and permanent government occupying D.C. have joined hands to run psychological operations against the American people? When Obama's director of the CIA, John Brennan, spends years on television pushing a demonstrably false Russia collusion hoax created out of thin air by Hillary's political network and used by the Obama administration to spy on the Trump campaign, and nobody goes to prison, is there any question that the U.S. government is engaging in domestic information warfare to manipulate American sentiment? When the Russia hoax, perpetrated by 2 former directors of the FBI and CIA, Obama's Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, and both Republicans and Democrats on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, among many other players, was finally exposed as a classic disinformation maneuver meant to hurt President Trump, did the mainstream media take a moment to acknowledge that high-ranking members of the intelligence community had attempted to take down a sitting president? Of course not. Accomplices don't ask questions. They hide motives. They just moved right on to a fake quid pro quo impeachment cynically used to damage President Trump during an election year while covering up the Biden family's financial corruption in Ukraine and China. When that had little effect on the president's approval polls in the spring of 2020, the press turned the China virus into an electoral weapon for justifying the illegal imposition of mass mail-in ballot voting while terrifying millions of Americans into believing that their lives depended on a Biden victory. Military and intelligence officials with no honor whatsoever signed their names to a document falsely attributing Russian disinformation. The New York Post's accurate report on the damning Hunter Biden laptop exposing the Biden family's corruption and vulnerability to blackmail. And in another letter, military and intelligence officials claimed that only Joe Biden could, quote, return character, principles, wisdom, and leadership. I'm trying to keep from laughing here, all right, to the position of commander-in-chief. It should not have taken Biden's disastrous train wreck this month in Afghanistan to know that a man with a history of racism and sexual assault and an unnatural fixation with inappropriately touching children is not capable of acting honorably. It should not have taken the Biden administration's conscious destruction of America's newly won energy independence and eagerness to jump back in to bed with Iran's terrorist-sponsoring regime to question whether his history of pay-for-play self-enrichment from foreign adversaries and his son's historic history of unpunished criminality put the United States at risk. Because the FBI and DOJ stayed mum about Hunter's laptop and the press suppressed the story, nobody knows how the measly 40,000 votes that handed victory to Biden might have otherwise been cast. In other words, the U.S. intelligence community actively engaged in disinformation and propaganda against the American people in order to affect a presidential election. And they did so by spending years amping up tensions with Russia, by falsely accusing our nuclear adversary of engaging in the exact information warfare our intel officials were conducting. Only a press corps so thoroughly corrupted by partisan impulses as ours could sit back while the deep state attempts to hang its own wrongdoing on a foreign power, with all the national security risks that entails, and conclude, there's nothing to see here, let's all move along. I want to take a break for a second. One, because I'm hearing some background noise. So, Gene, we got a little bit of stuff coming out there. And also because it says how measly 40,000 votes handed victory to Biden. That's really it. 40,000 votes changed. Would have changed everything.
Say,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, with Biden and all his corruption, and the people can say, oh, no, that's just fake media. Okay, you tell me, fake media, why is what happened with who charged him with sexually assault or something like that, and all those documents are sealed and can't be opened? I'm sorry, but you know what? As a presidential person, candidate even,
yep,
that stuff should be made public. Because why is it under lock and key? Because there's some truth in there he doesn't want to come out. And once again, everybody is covering up for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
you know,
like the club.
You know, his whole administration is corrupt. From Miley, all three of those military people should be charged and they should be fired. They should lose their retirement.
Yeah, I don't know if Congress can fire a general, but they can certainly withhold the budget for them. You
no,
know,
they can
cut the position.
Well, and they want anyway because the Democrats are in control.
Well, and
so
here's the thing, too.
Will continue.
Well, even when the Republicans were in charge, they didn't do a whole lot. You know, there's no magic of having Republicans in charge. Republicans
are not at all.
Yeah, they're best at complaining when they're in the minority, but when they're in the majority, they don't lead. You know, last time Republicans had Congress, they spent as much money as the Democrats were spending. So this isn't unique to them. This is the deep state. This is a permanent government class that believes in ever-increasing spending and lying to you that we have to meet our obligations. No, they have to not authorize the new spending, which requires the new borrowing. So keeping the debt limit where it is will do nothing to change the current situation. The current situation is all the debts can be paid for because the debt ceiling, you know, accomplishes that. The new spending is the spending they haven't done yet that would bankrupt this country, that would exceed the debt limit. And this is the part that people are finding hard to understand. Current spending is just fine. But they want to have new spending this year beyond the trillions that they've already spent to get that new spending, that have to raise the debt ceiling. So this isn't about meeting our obligations. This is about taking on new ones. There's nothing that can't be nothing right now that would cause the debt ceiling to rise or the government to shut down. Nothing. All they're talking about is trying to add these new bills that would break the debt ceiling if it's not raised, and it would cause a default, only because they want to add to the new spending, not because they want to maintain what they have. Three paragraphs left, and we're done. We're done for the week, actually. It's going to be, and I'll come back after my first gig, you know, Monday. This will be fun. Author says, how can a sitting president win over 10 million more votes than his first election, beat his opponent in almost every traditional bellwether county across the country by double digits, and still come up short of victory after 4 days of additional vote counting in a handful of Democrat-run metropolitan counties in battleground states? Yeah, people forget how much Trump really won by. He says that's such an obvious question that reporters should have jumped on at the opportunity to scrutinize how a candidate who had hidden away in his basement for the entirety of the campaign had pulled off such a historic feat. Instead, that question and any investigations toward finding answers were immediately censored by the same big tech social media companies and news conglomerates that actively pushed for Biden's victory while they eagerly framed Trump voters as insurrectionists and enemies of the state. Just as censorship of the intelligence community's active war against the American people became the order of the day in the American newsrooms, censorship of too many unanswered questions surrounding the legitimacy of the 2020 presidential election became part of that same information war, too. That war was waged against me in the multiple times that I was censored, and I had to remove my page from public scrutiny. I had to remove liberal friends. And I had to purge all kinds of folks just in order to keep my Facebook account. That's the world we live in. So that's what I did. And now I'm able to still post things. He says, I don't think DC's despots are capable of processing information or learning in real time. They're too busy preening and fluffing each other's egos to stop, consider how reviled they are by the rest of the country. Yeah, that's true. They have no idea.
I know.
Isn't
that something?
Them.
Yeah. It's like they're a love fest, you know, on each other. And it's like, well, I guess you're the only one who can say that in regards to what you're doing, because you're not doing anything positive for this country.
Yeah, it's interesting that our the folks involved with the show that believe what's going on in Washington is incompetence are the people that are that live just outside Washington. And then the folks that are thinking it's all on purpose, it's diabolical, it's Marxist, it's who they are people that don't live around Washington. I find that interesting. And
Washington is an entity all itself, that's for sure.
Yeah, sure is. Rest of the paragraph says, for those outside of D.C., however, this is funny, we're just talking about that. How prophetic. For those outside of D.C., however, I challenge anybody to articulate a bigger threat to America today than the onslaught of government-sponsored disinformation, mass media manipulation, and censorship used to support the regime in the White House. I challenge anybody to look at the crumbling of America around us and not see the intelligence community and its partners in the press as those most responsible for our mess. When the government is committed to manipulating truth and the media are committed to censoring truth, neither stands for the American people. Last paragraph, there's a biting meme online showing a picture of one of President Trump's countless informal press conferences next to the now ubiquitous image of Biden's back seen while he shuffles away from reporters' questions. The caption nails the distinction. Quote, the truth is not mine being questioned. It is lies that do not like to be challenged. I would add only this. The more our government and press attack Americans for challenging official lies, the more responsible they are for the damage those official lies bring. Every disaster endured by Americans today because of the Biden regime's mendacity and incompetence ultimately rests with those who first enabled the regime to come to the power through lies of their own. Wow. And that would be come to power through lies of their own. Yeah. An extra word there. Wow. Huh, pretty much sums it up for me. That's exactly what's going on. Ruling Class's Blood on Its Hands by J.B. Shirk, September 2nd. It's an American thinker. So I posted several times. Yeah, I find people don't read the articles sometimes until I highlight them. It's like, you don't trust me. People look at my Facebook pages. When I post an article, there's a reason. All right. It's hopefully pretty good. You might, get something. We got less than 2 minutes. Gene, you want to sum up the week from your perspective? What do you think?
You know, I try to not be disillusioned, and it's just, And I'm continuing to keep the faith because regardless what bumper Jack thinks, which I don't care, but I do believe that Trump is going to be back in office. I do believe that truth and righteousness prevails. And this, what is going on in Washington right now, and you can say, well, it always goes on. I think it's hit an all-time high level. I can't see it being sustainable. And I really believe that truth does trump evil. And evil meaning the Biden regime and everybody included in that. And you can say, oh, no, that's not true. That is true, especially when you look at what's going on this week with Miley, all those guys. They sit there thumping their chest. And the thing is with him, if he was talking to all these book people, it's like, when were you doing your job? When were you doing your actual job? And the thing is with that, if you were trying to maintain confidence in the people you were, meaning your troops, why are you spewing your mouth like that? Because you're talking on both sides. You're coming across as this person that's not, that is apolitical, but that's the biggest lie there ever was. And I think people need to keep demanding that their justice be served, and they get rid of them all. But then they get rid of them all, and then there's just a whole bunch of incompetent people below them, because those are the ones that seem to get promoted are the ones that are the yes men.
Yeah.
So you
summed it up.
Keep the faith, keep the faith. It's going to happen, not on our time, but it's going to happen. There's like this. We would not
happen on our time
if it weren't for a reason. So.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely going to happen in our time. I think we're going to be a major factor in helping it happen. Anyway, we're out of time. That was the perfect summation for the week. Thank you so much. We'll be back Monday, Gene and I, at 6 o'clock in the morning Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, 2 Hawaii. I'll look that up. But what an incredible week. Wow. Boy, I'll tell you. We do have some interesting times. Excuse me, some interesting times here. All right, Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back Monday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, Central Time, 7 Eastern.